everybody. This is David Rockline with the Pitwall Podcast, presented by Kickin' Ass Ball. I got Steve Guthrie here with me.
Hello, everyone.
We're going to have Ken Guthrie on the show with us today. We are going to have results, too, so...
Put your seatbelts on, because it's about to be a wild ride.
You might need take a job and shove it.
You might need a helmet, too, so here we go.
Still care.
Dear God.
We got that.
Sound like a professional singer, didn't it?
Professional something.
All right. So, hey, Ken.
How you doing?
Good. Glad to have you on here finally. Everybody's been wanting you on here for a while, so...
We've had a bunch of requests on Facebook and text messages and stuff wanting to hear... Want to hear your story. Tell us a little bit about what got going on with the Guthrie family and how we got into this mess.
It turned out to be a perfect week to get you on too, because somebody went to Victory Lane this weekend, so his picture made.
Oh yeah, we had us a good weekend this weekend. A real good weekend.
Yeah,
had a good time racing with Devin Kelly and Rick Kelly, a whole gang out there.
Yeah.
We got penalized, though. We didn't get him back to the retirement home before 12 o'clock.
And,
they fined us a couple hundred for not having him.
12 before we got home, they had to help me out of the truck when we got here.
Yeah, your medicine wears off, so you can't move anymore. Well, people want to hear about how you got into racing. I know you got tons and tons of stories and all kinds of goofy stuff that everybody wants to hear. And tell me how the Guthrie Racing started. Like, I mean, not Guthrie Racing here, but like, you know what I mean.
Well, when I was growing up, my dad was a motorcycle racer, flat track racer. And we used to go, that's all we did every weekend. We went to a motorcycle race somewhere, Augusta, you name it, we was there. And if you look, David and them took some pictures the other week of their broadcasting here. You'll see the picture up on the right side of their picture. Those two little bitty boys you seen up there is me and my kid brother. I was think I was 6 and he was 5.
Yeah.
So, like I said, that's where it started at. It was always at motorcycle tracks. It was either there or was at the house making helping daddy make bootleg liquor.
Oh, Lord.
So the brother you're talking about in the picture, that's Tony.
Yeah, that's my brother Tony. Yeah.
Did he sing the song from The Wizard of Oz back then, If Only Had a Brain?
Oh, yeah. They had passing out brains. He thought they said trains.
So he left his at home. Yeah. So... I see the picture over there. There's a 43 on the front of that motorcycle. Is that why you like Richard, or did he have that number before Richard started?
Yeah, my dad had that number years ago, but okay. Richard had it. But really, his number was he rode with AMA, so that was the number they gave him.
Okay.
Back then, so you know, he flat track racing. He went out to Daytona. He won the Daytona Speedway race down there where they race on sand and asphalt. He won that track down there 3 times.
Really?
Racing. He was running up the beach, they said, and run right on the edge of the water at over 100 miles an hour.
Really? On 2 wheels.
And when he was telling you they give them their number with AMA, that's the class of rider you are. Yeah, like you're 43rd in the country.
Okay. Yeah. Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a good class.
So, he's got a Triumph shirt on. Was that like a factory back team, or was that just
Triumph sponsored dead? You know, so they even had a motorcycle shop in Augusta, Georgia. Bob Conninger that took care of the motorcycle, Augusta Cycle Sales.
Yeah,
they took care of all the bikes and everything.
Wow!
And out of all the years that Daddy rode, the only time he ever broke a bone in his whole body, he broke his leg down at Daytona Speedway. A woman was backing out of a parking place while he was tuning his carburetor on his bike and ran over him.
So he wasn't even racing then.
No, he wasn't racing. He was out in the pit area just trying to tune his bike, and she backed up and broke his leg.
Tried to run him over.
That'd be rough.
Yeah, it would. Were you going with him? I mean, I see you in that picture. So were you going all over the place with him? Were you going to Daytona and stuff with him?
I never got to Daytona. That's Augusta on that picture.
Yeah.
And they used to go down to Augusta and run like once or twice a month and all. So
okay.
We was always there. And there's a bunch of other tracks, but I was so young, I can't remember.
Did he ever? I know you've talked before about Anderson used to be a flat track in the day. Did he ever run Anderson?
No. Well, he raced at Greenville Pickens when it was dirt. We didn't go out
on
there
on a motorcycle.
Oh yeah, they flat track raced at Greenville Pickens when it was dirt, and that's back in the 60s and all.
Wow.
That was a one and done deal, from what I understand. There was a couple fellas killed off in turn three.
Okay. I thought I had heard that they built it originally as a horse track.
That's what it originally used to be.
And then they started running cars, but I never knew that they ran motorcycles on that. Yeah. That's crazy.
Well, I never knew until the other day that Tom Black won them, so Jack Suttle's Fountain Inn Speedway years ago.
Really?
Yep.
So Tom and them own Fountain Inn and
it would have been Golden Strip Speedway. I believe they had Fountain Inn prior to Greenville Pickens, if I'm not mistaken.
Reese Fant was told here the other day. He was telling me all about how they had it.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, Reese Fant. That's pretty
good. Reese.
We're going to get
him. Have a lot of knowledge. Oh, for the folks that aren't here in our little room, we have a bunch of pictures kind of our racing history. And there's a picture of Dad and his brother and my grandfather on the wall. And Dad, and like I say, they was, 5 or 6 years old. But if you look at the picture, you really look at the detail. I wish folks could see it. The hands on these two little boys at this racetrack are just like, you see how dirty they are?
Yeah, one of them, it looks like he got dirt on his face. I can't tell if that's Ken or...
I think Tony would be on the left, if I'm not mistaken.
That's Ken with dirt on his face.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
But check he's a brown noser then, too, apparently.
Look at the ears on those kids. I don't know what it is from kids from the 50s. It looked like car doors open or something on the side of their head.
Yeah.
Well, back then, we had to hear. We didn't sit around all the time with our computers.
Oh, so you had to hear?
Here we go.
Yeah. So... how did he go from, so you're going around with him, how did he go from two wheels to four wheels?
Well, to be the true story about it, in 1960, the revenuers got him, shut him down with his bootleg liquor and all.
Okay.
And so after that, he kind of moved away from the motorcycles and started racing at Greenville Pickens. Johnny Roberts and Robert Taylor had a 00, a 55 Chevrolet. But now, he drove a few other cars before that. His brother and one of my uncles built one a couple times. But he got driving a 00, and he done real good in it. Raced for quite a few years.
Okay.
But then...
So at this point, are you riding motorcycles too? Have you stopped riding motorcycles?
Well, this time here, I just right along the time where I started racing motorcycles, Randall Durham took me up at Glacier Mountain Speedway.
Okay.
And put me on a motorcycle one day. So... I went out there and made me a few laps on it, and I've never been on a motorcycle on a flat track before.
Now, just to give everybody some context about Randall Durham, we have a car here.
Oh, yeah.
That's
our throwback to Randall Durham.
The throwback to Randall Durham, and it's beautiful. I think you put a picture of it on Facebook
not too long ago.
It's number 84, black and with yellow numbers. And
Silver fox on the door.
You got Silver fox on the door. I've heard a few stories from Ken about that place. We can't talk about that on this podcast.
Yeah, we'll talk about that, But anyhow, Randall, they grew up the street from where we live. We live almost neighbors. And Randall's daddy, flat track racer with my daddy.
Yeah.
And there's pictures everywhere. Ray Durham, he was a killer, too, on the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Daddy was good, Ray Durham. Back in them days, they had a whole bunch of them that all ran together, like Herman Brown, Benny Boodle, Leonard Shockley. There's a whole lot of them that rode together.
Mm-hmm.
And they raced everywhere together.
Yeah.
Even like Coleman lived up the street from home.
Mad Thad Coleman.
He used to race motorcycles. Coleman. Yep. My dad used to carry him and his motorcycle and trailer out on 85 and drop him off. Mad Thad would hitchhike to the motorcycle tracks. I mean, anywhere they was racing at. And then we would get to the track, Mad Thad would already be there.
Wow. So you rode motorcycles for a little while, and you flat tracked. Was Steve around when you were flat tracking?
Steve was born then, but...
Steve's what are you, 62 now, Steve?
No, I'm 63.
Oh,
No, I started flat tracking when I was like 15 or 16 after Randall and him got me into it.
Yeah.
And then my dad kind of got away from the racing, and he started helping a bunch of us, and we was flat tracking. We used to travel different tracks we always run at Glacier Mountain Speedway and Wolf Speedway on Highway 14, and in Statesville, North Carolina, we run at Church Speedway. And that was every week we run at three different tracks until, I finally got on up a little bit better. And we started going to Bulls Gap, Tennessee, and racing on Friday nights. And then we'd run at Statesville, North Carolina on Saturday nights and race two flat tracks on Sunday, one in Charlotte and one in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Yeah.
And we did that every week for 4 or 5 years or something like that. So And then it got on around the time where Daddy got back into racing again. And I done got married. But like I say, when Steve was born, he was 2 weeks old, and we had him at Wolf Speedway. Flat track, he was always there. Yeah. And my dad was still alive then. So Dad would always make us carry him up behind the grandstands for the noise wouldn't hurt his little ears.
And he said that was 2 weeks old. Well, 2 weeks prior, 4 weeks prior to me being born, Mom was 9 months pregnant, you know, the pop with me down at Anderson Speedway, and it was a bad crash.
Yeah, that's flat track. And we raced down at Anderson Speedway, and that was in 1973. And I had got to where I was pretty good on flat track.
Yeah.
And they just threw the green flag. So me, just like I always do, I'm out showing out a little bit, getting up in the high groove and the wet stuff. Well, I come down the backstretch at Anderson into turn three, and it was real wet, and I lost it. It got out from under me, and I hit the wall and flipped over the wooden rails they used to have around the track. But it didn't hurt me. It just tore my leather jacket off of me and stuff. But I jumped up waving my arms because I knew my wife was in the pits, and she's 9 months pregnant with this pain in the butt over here. So
she was actually behind the grandstand.
Yeah.
She run from, like, turn one area.
She's protecting your ears.
Yeah.
She run all the way from turn one to turn three, all the way across the track. When the ambulance got over to me, when she got there, they put her in the ambulance and took her back to the pits. I just walked back. But then when they had the restart of the race, that was the last race they ever run Anderson Speedway. On flat tracking. One of my racing mates there, his name was Roger Buchanan. They had just started the race back, and his bike was skipping. He had dropped back from the field about 100 yards. Well, he come off of turn four, and the little boy that worked at the racetrack, running back and forth across the track to get the concession food to bring down to the pits and all, ran out in front of him, and he hit him. In other words, both of them died that night.
Oh, wow.
So that was the last race that they ran down at Anderson Speedway flat tracking.
And I spoke with Miss Sylvia about this a year or so ago. I was telling her the story about what he just told you, and she said the little boy was a neighbor of theirs, the little boy. And
really?
Her that dad, Mr. Porter, brought him to the track, and he helped and all with him. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was a sad little deal.
Yeah.
So sad.
But you said they both died?
Yeah, both of them died. Well,
wow.
Well, Roger died that night. We didn't know that. We thought Roger died the next day, but the little boy died the next morning.
Wow.
But like I say, it was terrible.
And so is that... Did that kind of prompt you into getting out of that? Was Jane kind of wanting you to get out of the motorcycles? Or?
I don't know. Steve got on. He was on up, you know, probably a year or two old before I quit. Then it just got to where, really, I started getting into some stock car racing myself.
Yeah.
I bought a race car from Randall Durham to race at Greenville Pickens in 1975. I used to run Charger class, Steve? Or
it would have probably been street stock back then.
This was asphalt.
It was asphalt.
It was asphalt.
Yeah. 75, 76.
I ran out there 75, 76, and a little bit of 77, and then I sold my car to Red Everett.
See, I didn't know this. I didn't know that you ran Greenville Pickens back in the 70s. I thought the first time you ran was, there's a picture behind us of a red car with a yellow number 20 on it. I thought that was the first time you ran asphalt. But so you ran asphalt way back in the 70s at Greenville, too.
Back there, I ran out Greenville some then, which back then, just about the whole field was family almost. We had Ricky Mann, Terry Mann, Jimbo Mann, Pete Mulls. Yeah, I can't name all of them. All the Gentry, Harold Gentry, David Gentry, just about all of them race with us.
So was it like this? Like now, did y'all just bring the whole shop with you?
This gang of us showed up. It was fun there.
Yeah.
We went out there, and just, most of the time was wrecking each other. But like one Saturday night, it rained a race out at Greenville Pickens. We couldn't get nobody to go with us, so me and Harold Gentry went to Speedway Park.
Uh-huh.
So we took our asphalt cars up there with our tires from Greenville Pickens and everything. But that's a pretty good field. We got up there, and it was 33 cars started the field that night. And it had been raining, and it was 6 or 8 inches of mud on both turns. I mean, you could run off in it and just about go out of sight. So they threw the green, and away we went. Well, me and Harold both started in the rear of the field. Well, we was too busy running each other into the mud and spinning each other out and everything like that. But I still got the newspaper clipping to this day. When that race was over, Harold finished second, and I finished third.
In your cars from Greenville Pickens.
And we was in cars from Greenville Pickens. But now, you got to know this, too, now. They went with 3 cars, finished the race.
Yeah, I can only imagine how that went. So back then, Rodney, you know, Harold's son, we were both about the same age.
We're talking about Birdman, right?
Yeah, that's Birdman.
Yeah.
We were about the same age, so it's always been cool to hear the story of of this.
Them and going out to the dirt track.
Many more stories of Dad something. And Harold going down White Horse Road racing.
Yeah, Harold Gentry worked at Michelin. And I used to work at a plumbing company over on Augusta Road. And every day when I'd get off of work, me and Harold just about meet where Augusta Road and White Horse comes together. And we would race to Berea. I'm talking about race down White Horse Road now. And I'm not joking. We'd pass each other on the sidewalks, pass each other in the medium. You know, back in them days, the law wasn't as bad as they are now. Yeah. You should just throw your hand up at them and keep getting it.
And White Horse Road wasn't as wide as it is these days.
Oh, no.
What was it?
It was probably it? Two lanes.
Two lane back then?
Oh, yeah. And I'm telling you, we done some racing down there. We'd probably be hitting 70, 75 miles an hour going down White Horse Road.
On the sidewalks and everywhere. That's crazy.
So with that, the Speedway Park deal, and you know, they raced. He raced a little bit longer in the street stock at Greenville. You were bought out by, you talked a minute ago about Red Everett.
Oh yeah.
So was going back to the Speedway Park.
Yeah,
the Speedway Park. So is that what you got you wanting to? Was that the first time you ran dirt?
Oh no! That was the first time along then I ran dirt, but you know I'd always wanted dirt, so. It was a few years later on after that is when I went over to Earl Gentry's house one weekend. And I told old Earl, I said, Earl, I wish I could find me a good dirt track car somewhere. Earl says, I got a Strawberry Davis Camaro sitting out behind the shop here.
And yeah. Who's
Strawberry
this guy?
Davis.
Strawberry Davis was, he was a pretty good shoe back in the day. He ran Cadet, which would be probably equivalent to what Superstock is at Greenville, but on dirt.
Okay.
You know, back then. So,
he was one of the dudes on dirt.
He was a good.
Okay.
And this doggone Camaro that I bought from Earl, I didn't have a motor. So, I'm riding down White Horse Road, and I look on the right side of White Horse Road, right before the doggone where the movie theater used to be, and there's a 57 Chevrolet four-door sitting there for sale. I stopped and talked to the lady. It's a black lady that owned it and all, and she sold me the car cheap. So, we took the motor and transmission out of that 57 and put in my race car. And let me tell y'all boys something. I got first, second, or third every week in that car.
With just a motor off the side of the road?
The road. And this is no kid. I'd mash the gas when it dropped the green, and I never let off until the race is over.
That sounds about like now.
Yeah, exactly how you.
But we had a good time in, and but every week, you know, somebody's always raising a king about how I was running so good. But now, let me tell you something. I run it. This is a Fountain Inn, Golden Strip Speedway. Mm-hmm. I could go to Anderson Speedway, and them same guys that I run first, second, third, I run dead last every week.
Really?
I ain't never been able to drive Anderson Speedway.
Anderson, yeah.
And it was about the same size track. So yeah. It didn't like the we don't know what the magic
it was.
Was.
Dirt.
Oh, that was back in his dirt thing.
That was dirt then.
Yeah, this was along 84, 85.
Okay.
I was a little bitty feller.
I got you.
Oh yeah, but then you know, later on in the years now. So that time when I didn't run no more asphalt, you know, for a little while.
So is Cadet is it like super stock, like what, wider tires or is it?
Yeah, they were probably like the late model dirt tires.
Yeah,
okay. Then, but it was an old Camaro or whatever.
Street class.
Super stock would be now with like a stock frame, but you got wide tires.
Yeah.
Not quite a late model yet.
Yeah, and that's the car that you seen the throwback that we had a couple of years ago, the Camaro, and I had a picture of Dad with a dirt car back in the day, so it was a blue number 3.
Yes.
Yeah, so. Fountain Inn was one of these tracks, though. You know, you'd go down the river, you know, Saturday night for the fights, and every once in a while, a race would break out.
I'm telling
you, when I was even younger than that, I remember all the wars going on in the pits and all the fighting. I've laid underneath trailers many a nights and watched the fighting going on down
really?
There.
Really?
Yeah.
I wish we could tell the story, but we got to keep it clean.
Yeah,
just because the way the world is today. But he used to. They had grandstands separate for other folks, and they used to.
Yeah, back in the days, you know, back we're talking about in the '60s and all. They used to have the black grandstands.
Yeah.
So I think I was probably 6, 7, 8 years old. So every weekend when we get to track, while Daddy and them was fooling when the race cars get ready, all of us kids would gather up, make mud balls over in turn two. Because turn two is the black grandstands right outside of it. So when they'd drop the green and their cars would be throwing dirt everywhere, we was throwing dirt everywhere too.
What little punks.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were mean little jokers.
Wait a minute. I'm confused here because we don't see many people of color or black people at the races. So they came to the races?
Oh, yeah, these little brats then, probably scared them off.
Let me tell you something. Back then, they as mean as they was of us, they love racing now.
Really?
Yeah, they still love racing.
Well, I know like you can go to a drag strip and you can see a bunch. You know, there are a lot of them there because they're into drag racing, but you don't, I mean,
I know.
I know nowadays you're starting to see more of it because of like Bubba Wallace and stuff like that. But and NASCAR's kind of taking a different approach to it. But back then it was a different time.
It was a Southern boy sport. And
let me tell you though, during the race there, I met some good people though. Like you got James Chapman, he's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
You got Tony and Wallace Sullivan, who's good friends of mine from growing up, black friends of mine. Let me tell you, they're true friends too. I'm telling you, I could tell you some stories about them, but we better not.
Oh yeah, this James Chapman he's talking about. I've known him since I was a kid. He's Uncle James, you know what I mean? He's a good dude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, like he's good as go.
Okay. So you got this cadet car. Let's get back to racing here. So we got this cadet car and how long did you run that car?
Well, I ran down Fountain Inn until I killed it. Well, until it liked to kill me. I think Steve was about, I think he's 6 years old. How old was he, Steve?
12.
And this one night there, I done got the pole, and I started on pole. We dove off into turn one and two in the start of the race. I was in the high groove. Well, the car's coming there and banged into me and kind of knocked me up on the dirt bank that used to be around Fountain Inn. Mm-hmm. So finally, when it all come over with, I didn't crack the throttle like always. Well, I ended up flipping end over end and bounced all over top of all the cars. So when I come to a stop, Steve had just walked out of the bathroom down in the pits, and all you could see was just pieces of car all the way down the straightaway. When my car come to a stop, the roll cage is all that was still intact with my seat in it. We loaded a whole car in the back of a pickup truck.
So you're just sitting there in a roll cage.
That's it.
In a roll cage. You know, I come out of the restroom and looking at my dad.
Is this the car that I've heard you guys talk about paint? Is this the car that you painted with car. Like 5 gallons of paint or something
I'm not
like that?
No painter, Somebody don't want to give me the paint, sponsor me. Won't give me paint, sponsor, and put their name on my back of my car. So I took 5 gallons of paint. I didn't know how to paint, really, so I kept getting runs. So I kept running them runs out. I put that whole 5 gallons of paint on them. The next morning when I come in the shop, I took a razor blade knife and cut all the paint off. It was dripped down to the ground.
So after the flip and all the Jackie Suttles, we dig pools with Jackie still today. And Jackie would tell us that there was blue paint on the back stretch for years. And probably to this day, if you go down to the National Guard Armory, you could probably kick around some dirt and find some blue paint
Some blue paint from that 5 gallons.
Yeah, it was pretty blue, though. It was petty blue.
So what did you just figure since they gave it to you? You were just supposed to use it all?
That was all we had. I had 5 gallons of paint. What was I going to do with it?
So wait a minute. Did you cut it down, too? So was it even more than 5 gallons?
Oh, it was probably knowing him, he didn't thin it.
I mean, now that you know what I'm saying, thin it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised he didn't put it on with a roller, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, I didn't have a roller.
You didn't have a roller. No, so were you blowing it out of a straw? What are you doing?
You've been around him enough years to know if a little's good, a lot's better.
Well, better.
Our shop used to be right there across from the 123 from the White Horse Road Drive-In Theater. I worked with R&R Equipment, and that's where old R&R sponsored me, and that's where we doggone painted the car at in the back room back there.
Really?
Yeah, whenever I just slide all the pot or something stuff out of the way to paint the car with.
Whoa.
Oh, Lord, telling somebody secrets now.
Yeah, it was somebody else their secrets.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. So you got this car, you destroyed it. So then what do? Are you out of it for a while? Or what's Jane say at this point?
Oh, well.
Your wife.
We're idiots.
My wife didn't mind. She loved all my racing. She was always there for me and everything.
Yeah.
So she was about the greatest woman in the world. I hated I lost her in 2010.
I met Miss Shane back in the day too. She was pretty protective of her family, but she was a good lady. So you get out of it, or are you still in it? What are you doing?
Well, I did. I got out of it for a few years, and then my dad passed away in 1977.
Okay,
and so I got out for a few years, and then one day I'm going down the road digging a swimming pool, just like I do to this day, and this is in the early 80s, wouldn't it, Steve?
No, the next car we had would have been the early 90s. I was a teenager, 14, 15 years old.
So you were out of it for old were you when he was flipping down the backstretch?
I was about 12, 11 or 12.
So that was into that for four or five years?
Yeah, and then, 89, 90, maybe 91, somewhere in there, we went back again.
Okay, so how did you, what made you guys want to get back into it then?
I say.
We loved it.
We loved racing, but like I said, I was driving down the road, and there was a super late model sitting on the side of the road for sale. No motor or transmission. Oh, yeah, it had a motor or transmission, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I stopped and talked to the guy and bought it. So we're going to go super late model racing. Mm. I'm talking about the Flintstone Flyer and all them.
All the big boys.
Oh, yeah, big boys. So, and we ran with them, and it'd be, 14, 16 cars. And every week I could run sixth or seventh every week. So I got tired of this. I went and had, what was his name, build me that motor?
Ben Durham over
Pickens. I got Ben Durham and Pickens to build me a motor. Cost me $10,000. I maxed out my credit card and got me a new motor. Went back to the, it was when we was running I-85 Speedway. So I showed up there in a Flintstone Flyer and all them Zero, Mike Duvall and all of them. So like I say, they throw the green flag. I still run fifth, sixth, or seventh every week. Maybe it's all mad. I spent all that money and didn't get nowhere. So I think I raced, would I race maybe a year?
Yeah, we didn't make it through the year.
Yeah. I can't stand running back in the back, and I couldn't catch them.
I know that.
So one Saturday night was at I-85 Speedway. Some guy came over and said, hey, Guthrie, I heard you got that new Ben Durham motor. And I said, yep. Said, I'm ready to sell this car, too. Said, somebody wants to buy or sell it. He said, what would you take for it? I said, I'll take $10,000 for it right now. So he walked off. I thought he was full of bull. A little while later, they come back down with $10,000 cash. I took the jack off the back of the truck, took my toolbox off the back of the truck, threw it down beside the trailer, jacked it up off the back of the truck, and got in the truck and left.
Just left.
Car, yeah. Trailer, tools, jack, and all.
Me and my buddy sitting in the back seat of this little Isuzu extended Trooper, cab truck, yeah. And we're just kind of looking out the window.
Hold on. So you pulled this super late model to the racetrack with an Isuzu truck?
Isuzu.
He says a Trooper. It was a little Isuzu truck, but it wasn't a Trooper.
You can believe it. I could get 60 miles an hour going to the track, going down the hill.
Yeah, we look like probably a bunch of circus clowns, I guess, showing up. But, we were having fun.
Yeah, you were racing.
But in this toolbox, we never had an air gauge because I never seen an air gauge at a racetrack until I was, until we started racing at Greenville, in 98, 99.
So they're supposed to check the tire pressure?
What prompted you to do that? Did you see everybody else doing it?
Monkey see, monkey do. Yeah. I had no idea. Yeah. I was like, what the heck are they doing with that air gauge over there? We went to the racetrack, whatever air was in the tire we left.
But I'm going to tell you something. A few years later than this now, after I got rid of the car, some buddy of mine come up and asked me to come to a track with him. Was it I-85 again?
I-85.
He had a Ford, wanted me to drive it for him, but he didn't want to drive it, so I agreed to drive it. So we showed up there, just like Steve said, I don't remember ever checking air pressure, tires, or nothing. So it had been raining. The track was slick and wet. So we all went out on track to practice. We just got there and jumped and unloaded off the trailer and took out on the track. Mm-hmm. So I'm out there coming around turn 3 and 4 and spun out on the front straightaway. So I'm sitting there, and all the cars are zooming by me. Well, this car comes off of turn 4 down the straightaway, and he's looking me in the eye. He's got glasses on that are thicker than Coca-Cola bottles, and I could see his eyes way before he got there, and I could tell he wasn't going to stop. So I stuck it in reverse and stomped it, and he hit me about the same time. It run wide open back and run into the flagman stand backwards. So it total lost a car. It didn't do the guy with the glasses no car no problem either. So
dang. So this was somebody else's
car? Somebody else's car, and we brought it home on the trailer, and it was pretty well wiped out.
It was done.
It wasn't going back no races no more. Motor was just about up in front seat. Yeah,
it was a Ford Fairlane or something. It was pretty wadded up.
That's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen you crash very much, so.
Well, I mean, this was just a deal here. It was just a muddy, muddy mess.
It was muddy as it could be.
And then Ray Charles was out there driving, too.
Oh, so. Yeah. It was a Coca-Cola bottle. Yeah. Glasses. Got
to go down to that local Coca-Cola bottling company.
Bottling plant to get them. Were those prescription you want, I reckon?
Let me tell you, that's some thick glasses. I'm going to take us backwards a little ways. Back when I was flat track racing, about the same time I say Steve come along, I had a brand new Chevrolet Vega, 73 Chevrolet Vega, and I just got off of work, and I'm hightailing it down Whitehorse Road, headed to pick up Jane, my wife, over at her mother and dad's on Washington Avenue. And just as you cross the bridge over here at Greenville Body Shop, Kim's Bar used to be on the right there. Well, I know a lot of y'all out there remember when Kim's Bar ended up with a wooden front porch was gone, and they put a concrete porch back. Well, as I come through that red light, there's a car come down Whitehorse Road and darted over and hit me head on. Spun my Vega around. I hit the front of Kim's Bar and tore the whole wooden front porch off of it. Well, it hit me so hard, it bent my motor up under the front seat of the Vega and put me in the back seat. So when I raised up in the back seat to see what's going on, all I could see was legs are running around in the bar from the rearview mirror in my car. Well, I'm sitting in a car I couldn't get out, and I watched a guy and the girlfriend get out of the other car and go running down the road. They just run off down the road. So I gave the people in the bar my keys. They let me out through the trunk, the hatchback.
So pop the trunk, and oh, yeah. out you come.
That's it. So when the highwayman shows up now, I keep on telling him, we got to hurry up. And he finally says to me, he says, what are you in such a hurry for? I says, I got to go motorcycle race tonight. We're headed to Glassy Mountain. He says, you going to go to Glassy Mountain and race a motorcycle after a wreck like this? I said, as soon as you'll let me go, I am. I says, I got to go get my leathers and my helmet out of the back of my Vega first, though.
So they were still in the trunk, too.
Oh, yeah.
What a mess.
Good grief.
Yeah, so some buddies of mine at the bar loaned me their keys, give me the keys of their car, and we took off. I got Jane, and we went to Glassy Mountain and raced.
So you popped into the right bar.
Yeah,
there.
What a place to crash at a bar where your buddies are at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I had plenty of friends at the bars over there.
Well, it wasn't like you had cell phones back then either. You couldn't call somebody. Only,
we didn't have cell phones. We had Pac-Man machine, though.
Well, Pac-Man ain't going to call you. He probably had one of them. Back in the day, they had little things you could go pop the telephone box open, the little alligator clips, and you know, the telephone man will have it, and you dial a number or whatever. He probably had one of them. Just
Him or Tony had a pair of them.
Lots of fun
around.
Back in the days at the Silver Fox.
Yeah.
Kim's Bar.
Oh,
this
Lord.
Is it. This
All
is
right.
it.
All right. It's a family show.
You're right. Okay. This is it.
But you know, but when you go to This Is It, though, if you didn't have a gun, they used to issue you one.
They handed you one when you walked in?
Yeah.
You need this more than we do.
Yeah. So we quit racing dirt again, you know, 91, 92, when the Ford, and went on for, we sit at Grimble Pickens on the backstretch for, you know, been going out there ever since I was old enough to eat dirt.
Yeah.
You know, been there for years. So anyway, we got back out, got out there watching it. And
down in, well, like on the backstretch?
Yeah, we'd sit up in turn one. He built this contraption to sit on.
Oh, yeah, I built a S10 frame with a rack up on it, and everybody been to Grimble Pickens remembers it. It was set up about 6 foot in there and had seats all the way around it. Mm-hmm. So we set it up over in turn one. It sat there 12 or 14 years. But that's where we're sitting there.
I wonder, it ain't out there anymore.
Oh, no.
No, we ended up bringing it home. They got complaining about it.
Is it still here?
I cut it up, made the race car out of the chassis.
Crazy. He's full of mud. He's full of crap.
I probably say,
that sounds like a good lie to tell. Yeah.
Hey, around here, if it stays here long, I cut it up and scrap it.
I don't know if I tell everybody.
He's getting to tell one there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We sit out there. You know, by then, I'm in my mid to late teens. You know, and loving racing.
Yeah.
And you know, watching Robin Darnell and Foster and Greg Dodgins and watching all the gang,
has to be late 90s.
Yeah, this was late 90s, and them Superstock boys was, you know, having a ball.
Oh, yeah.
We wanted like Superstock car bad.
Jackie Foster and all them. And
but you couldn't just go out there and jump in a Superstock.
No.
No, we didn't start out like that. They just, one weekend, Steven said, Daddy, why don't we get us a race car down here? So I said, well, you know what, we might just do that. So we ended up buying a couple, what was it? Street stocks, what was it then?
You bought it was Dawn Gentry's.
Yeah.
It was her charger car back in the day when I guess she was, you know, a teenager. She was running out there, motor and all, race ready.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We'll take Uncle Earl, he'll take care of us.
Yeah.
We're the same age. Beat my uncle.
That's the red 20 you were speaking of here. We went to the track. We left, you know, that was her paint job, her paint scheme or whatever. We put our own decals as far as sponsors on it, but that was our first ride, you know, at Grimble Pickens when I was old enough to remember.
Well, there's a picture over here that I see that's Greenville, and maybe we'll try to get a couple pictures of it, maybe put it up on Facebook. But there's a picture on one side at Greenville. This must have been later on when he figured out that you didn't want to slide the back end around on
the asphalt. That was probably the first lap coming off of turn two. Because any other lap after that, he was sideways like a dirt.
Because there's another picture on the other side over here where he's looking out the side window basically at you, and it looks like Anderson.
Well, yeah, that one's Anderson there. Looked like Kenny Rogers or Brewster Baker with his little helmet on.
Well, my first few races out at Greenville, you know, I done run dirt so long, I hadn't run Greenville in a while. So when I get down in the straightaway, I cock it sideways and let her go, and I drive the turn sideways all the way around. So you can believe it, I just about led the whole race. And I forget what happened, and I ended up, I didn't win.
Yeah.
But anyhow, everybody come to pits and said, Guthrie, if you learn how to drive through the turn, some of us could pass you. We're all scared to get around you.
Or you would go faster.
Yeah. You go faster. Yeah.
He led the Shrine race out there that year with that car. And I'm telling you, it had so freaking much motor. But we come across a 650 dual line Holley we stuck on top of that motor. And that son of a gun, well, there's a video from back then. He was still smoking the tires as you passed the concession stand down the back straightaway. I mean, it was a monster.
It would run. I don't know what the world them had in that thing, but it'd go.
You guys put something on that made it really go.
Yeah, we made it really go.
So I got a. Was that legal? A dual line Holly on it?
Well, heck no.
Legal? I don't think I've ever been to the track legal.
So you didn't build them by the rule book?
Well, no. Just like Tom Blackwell used to send me the rule book every year. He would jerk all the center pages out of it and send me the outside. So one year I told Steve, I said, I'm going to ask Tom, why the devil, what's wrong with this rule book here? So Tom Blackwell told me, he says, you ain't ever want but no damn rules anyway, so what do you need a rule book for?
You don't look at anything besides the cover anyway.
Yeah. Well, I just see what I can get away with.
Yeah.
And if it works, then we keep on doing it.
There you go. So
we ended the Charger career quick. We found
what, like five or six, seven races, something like that.
We may have run 8 to 10 tops between two different cars.
Yeah, we wanted Superstock.
We bought a big Malibu.
So there was another car.
Yeah, after the little Malibu, we were like, we ain't too sure about this, so we went and bought a big Malibu.
Okay,
you know, that's the car.
Yeah,
and he just his brain and foot was a little faster than them little tires could handle, so. We had to hunt us a Superstock car pretty quick.
Yeah. So you end up going to get a Superstock car. Where's this come from?
We bought one from the Iron Bishop, Cedar Lang Auto Parts.
Okay.
Yeah, Iron had one sitting up in his garage, and we heard about it when we were talking to him. And Steve remembers a whole lot more about it, but, I mean, we had a good time in it, though.
Had you guys figured out what an air pressure gauge at this point?
Yeah, we started hanging around Tommy Galloway. He was like, look, idiots, you guys need to figure some stuff out. So I sharpened my pencil. I don't remember anything as far as anything outside of racing, but if you ask me something about a race car, I'm going to tell you what to do to fix it.
That's what my wife says.
And back in them days, if you want to run up front, you get Tommy on your side.
Yeah.
And so Tommy's a cousin of mine, so anything I wanted, we'd go over to his shop and spend 2 or 3 days. I'm talking about 24-hour days getting ready for a race on the weekend.
Huh.
And then he'd send us home on a Saturday morning. Y'all go home and get you a nap or something for a race tonight. We'll go out Greenville Pickens. If he worked on it, I won.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, yeah, anytime he touched it. And luckily, I didn't get a divorce.
Yeah, I've heard stories about that. Yeah.
I'm working on 22 years come Saturday or Sunday.
Wow.
And this knucklehead carries me to Tommy's shop on Wednesday to work on his race car. And I come home Saturday night after the race. So that was Wednesday to Saturday night. And we were real young in our marriage. So luckily, I'm not dead and still married to her.
Well, that's your testament. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
she's a good woman.
But I have heard, I know we're kind of jumping ahead here a little bit, but I know that, didn't y'all say that Tommy used to play video games or something? He'd be over there playing video games.
That NASCAR, whatever that Papyrus made, NASCAR computer game, he would be in the back room. He'd say, take your front springs out, and he'd go back there and race a little while, and then he'd come back out there and, all right, do this, this, and that, and then come back out.
Yeah. I mean, he'd say, take the front springs out, and he'd go back there for a few hours, and we'll finally go looking for him. And he had a hidden door in the back of his shop there, and you push the wall open, and look, and he's sitting on a racing simulator thing, racing while we back there working on the car.
But he would leave the shop like, 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm going over to Joe's to get a spindle.
Yeah, just at 1 in the morning?
He'd go get people, go in their shop. He'd call them up and get their keys and tell them where the keys are. And he'd go into people's shop and make stuff 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. Then come back over there and put it back on the car.
We're over here laying under the car going, where in the hell did Tommy Galloway go?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
It paid off, though, because when he worked on that car,
we won.
You won.
That's just how it was.
Okay, so back to the first car. So the first Superstock, we should say. So you guys go buy this car.
Yep.
From
Iron Bishop. Mike Bush was his driver.
Yep. Okay. So they were getting out of it, or?
The car had been sitting a few years. I think, I'm not sure of the story. I think they were just getting out of it, but I believe Mike and Jackie Foster had a little on-track altercation, maybe, and that was what prompted them getting out of it, I believe. I'm not 100% sure on that. But anyway, the car was sitting in the shop, so, we found a deal, and I believe Earl Gentry is the one told us to go get it. So.
Okay, so you guys go get that car. You painted it.
I painted like the Pennzoil car the first year out. I believe it was pretty sure it was 99 when that car went out, because
Just like the Pennzoil used to run in Winston Cup, the number one Pennzoil. On the side of it? Yeah. That's it right there. That's where we painted just like it.
I love the Steve Park car back then when DEI started, and that's where that paint job, I like that.
So you talked him into running number one too?
Yeah, well, I could have been the influence of the one.
Okay. I've always looked for the look. When I build a race car, I ride around for weeks when I'm going to paint it, looking at colors, the signs and everything. I look for a color I want.
Okay.
So, but I like that yellow. That was some of the first times. All right, let Steve figure that out, I think.
So I'll have a question here in a minute about another car. But so you guys run that car. How do you do in that car?
My first year, I never even really tried to win nothing. I just tried to race with everybody because there's a bunch of good guys to figure out what really I need to do.
Yeah.
You know, and who you can race with and all that. Because if you get out on a racetrack, you can figure out, if you'll watch the drivers, you can figure out who you can pass low or who you can pass high or who you don't need to pass at all. Yeah. So.
You're just earning the respects, basically.
Yeah. So just riding around trying to.
Yeah, that's what I did that year.
Establish and figure, let people know that you weren't going.
Yeah, I don't think I won nothing that year, did I?
No, we didn't win until the next year, 2000. Yeah.
So did you guys keep that car for the next year?
Yeah, we kept that car for about 3 years.
Okay.
We run it pretty well every week.
3 years, huh?
Longest time we ever kept car.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, we had that car in 99, 2000, 2001, and 2. That car is actually the checker flag front end car that your car is painted like today. And that's the same car we started with in 99.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so you kept that car in 99. What'd you paint it? Second year?
Yeah, the second year it had those splash down the side. It was blue and white.
Okay.
Greg Porter helped paint it.
B&B pools and all that stuff. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and then.
So how many races did you guys win? Did you guys win it? It was Tommy was working on it this time.
Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah.
Tommy built this chassis.
He had a lot of input in this particular car, helping when Mike Bush and Ira Bishop built it.
Okay.
He had a lot of input on it. And then, of course, when we got it, he had even more input on it.
Okay. Yeah. So then, second year, you guys painted
second
with the
year,
B&B.
Yeah, we painted all different.
Yeah, we won. Our second year, we won. That was
one or two, you remember?
I believe it might have been 2001 because Taylor was born that year in Victory Lane.
Yeah.
He won a race. And
yeah, there is a picture. There's a picture over here with Taylor and
Taylor in Victory Lane, and Hunter was in the oven.
Taylor's
my 22-year-old daughter.
22-year-old now. Yeah. So she was. That was.
That's Papa's baby.
Yeah,
they all Papa's babies.
So then the third year, is that when you guys painted it red?
Oh no! Actually, the third year we started out. It had yellow and blue and white splash on the front and all that.
Ah, yeah,
and
I remember that.
And they were on the 8-inch tires. And I'll let Dad tell you on the 8-inch tire.
Oh, yeah, the 8-inch tire. Yeah, that's the year they started 8-inch tires. But that's also a year which painted the car all in different colors. And it was going to have a different color, it turned out. But we put that blue pearl on it, and it turned it tangerine color.
Yeah, I don't know whose idea that was.
But it looked like the back bumper looked like when you cut a grapefruit open. It had a purplish tint into it. It was wicked looking on. But it was just.
The pictures, I guess, don't do it any justice.
Yeah, we went out there, though, on those small tires. And I just can't drive a car with small tires. I try to go too fast and too hard. So I think we probably stayed at it a couple races or so. And I said, to hell with this. I'm not racing no more like this. So I sold everything we had. I sold my race car, race trailer. I mean, if it had anything to do with racing, I got rid of it.
Gone.
Yeah.
Poof.
Again.
Everything. Yeah.
So
you're out of racing again.
Yep. Out of racing. And with him, I thought, well, that's it. He's done.
Okay.
But then on. About 6 weeks or so.
Oh, wait, are you still going to the racetrack, though?
Well, I don't remember if I went to the racetrack
or not. We didn't stop.
We kept going. We just sat outside. But about 6 weeks later, Tom Blackwell goes back to wide tires.
Huh.
So I said, oh, hell, what are we going to do now?
Time to go back racing.
Oh, yeah. So Tommy Galloway was telling me about, there used to be Jackie Foster's car back in the days when he won all the races and it was so fast. It was a 45 car, wouldn't it, Steve?
Yeah, it was a white 45 that Foster originally had.
A guy named Wes, what was Wes's name?
Jim West.
Jim West down in Fountain Inn, Simpsonville. That's a good man, I'm telling you. Well, he had this car. He had bought it, and he had took it out the track and spun it out one time and hit the wall and tore the front fender off. So he decided he wasn't going to get into racing. He wasn't going to race no more. So he had it sitting in a barn down in Simpsonville. And I'm talking about, this is a Tommy Galloway-built car, and I had to have it.
Yeah, it is a full-blown Galloway car.
Yeah, it was race ready. So we went down there, and I got talking to Jim West. And he wanted $16,000 for the Superstock. Well, there ain't nobody going to pay no $16,000 no Superstock. But I knew this car, and I wanted it.
Yeah.
So I told Jim, I says, I don't really have $16,000. I says, I can give you a couple thousand dollars or so down and pay you weekly or monthly if you'll work out with me. And that's when he told me, he says, well, Ken, I just don't know. I can't do something like that. You know, that's just kind of hard to do. I said, well, you kind of check around and just let me know if you change your mind. Well, the next day, Jim called me. He done called some of my different people that know me. And they told me, he said, you come pick up his car. You can have it if you want it. So we brought that thing home. Steve jumped on it and painted it, got it ready. And we took it back out Greenville Pickens. And Robbie Robbins had won just about every race on them small tires. So we done went back to big tires. So nobody had beat Robbie all year so far.
It was a tight battle between him and Phillip on those little tires. They were wearing each other out with that.
But we went back out there that night. And I can't remember what it was. We had to start last. But now we're talking about now back when they used to run 15, 16 cars, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. That was stacked field.
Yeah, that was back.
That was like, day, was, everybody.
I think this is about the time that I started coming out of the racetrack.
You had Dodgins.
I got my driver's license, and I was coming to the racetrack every week.
Yeah.
And we talked about that last week.
Oh, yeah. They had Greg Dodgins, Robbie Robbins, Phil Lynch, Michael Caine. I mean, it was a stacked field. John Martin. Chris Wally, Francis drove
CM Knight, Wally Shepherd.
Yeah, Wally Shepherd, CM Knight. I mean, it was a bunch of cars. Jeff Youngblood had his two
Jeff
cars.
Youngblood.
That was Hollinsworth and Dodgins was driving. Yeah. They were teammates then.
Oh, there's some good racers back in.
Yeah.
Good people to race with. But then we went back out there that night. They were starting back with the wide tires. And we started last in the field. But when they threw the white flag out, let me tell you who passed Robbie Robbins to get the checkered. It was me, boys.
On the high side.
On the high side.
Took him on the high side, and they couldn't believe that.
I bet you they weren't happy about that.
Yeah,
I'm
that
sure.
That particular night, I believe my wife hadn't been to the track in a while, and I believe it upset his girlfriend or wife or whatever.
A lot of people.
I won't get into that, but she's over there giving your number one finger. Hey, how you doing?
Lord.
So I had to go get my wife out of the trailer that night from over in their trailer.
Oh. So you mean there was a fisticuffs at the racetrack?
Yeah, it was a little antsy there for a minute, but I had to go in his trailer with nine guys and be like, hey, lady, you gotta come back over to our trailer.
Come back over to our trailer.
But we had a good time. Yeah.
So you win the first time you go back to the track.
Back on the track with that car. Okay. And we won a lot after that with that car.
Okay.
That car was awesome.
So you ran, was this like midway of the year?
Yeah, it was probably midway 2001. Yeah. That's right. It was about midway of 2001. Had that, pretty successful. We won, three, four, five races the rest of that year.
Was this a blue car with the red numbers?
It was a blue with rocket red 00 at first. And then the deal happened in September.
Yeah, the 911.
So we come back for the Shrine race. We had, stars and stripes on the through the numbers and stuff of that nature.
I remember that. Yes.
Yeah. And then that off season, we had sold our prior car. That off season, Ted Somero wanted that car. So him and Dad done some trading, and I ended up with Ted's championship Charger car.
Okay.
And was going to race it, and Dad was going to get out of racing, I believe, or whatever.
Yeah,
but he ended up, Jamie Tate bought our...
The first car you guys had.
Bought our first car. When we went 8-inch tires, Jamie Tate bought it. And then Dad bought this one. At the end of the year, Somero bought that car. And I ended up with his Charger car. And then Daddy went back and talked with Jamie and bought that car back. So 2002, that was the birth of the checker flag,
the checker 00. Flag 00.
The checker flag.
So where were you? Because that was my favorite car. I think I've talked about this a couple times now on here, but that's my favorite car of all time out of Greenville Pickens. Baddest car ever. Had the baddest motor. I was actually talking to Rob Horton at the racetrack Saturday because he came over to look at my car, and he was talking about how good it looked, and I said, does this car look familiar to you? And he said, oh yeah. He remembered when he got to drive the 00 for a while. He was talking about the motor in that car. He was talking about how bad that Shamrock
was the motor that come from the car from Jim West.
Okay.
So when Ted bought the car, he did not buy the motor.
I got you.
Dad had plans. So we had the 00 pretty successful in 2002 with that car. We he won four or five races with it, and then we went to Jefferson, first time down there at Jefferson Speedway, and there's a little story about that, so we'll let him tell that story.
Yeah. So you go down, is this the big World Crown?
Yeah, it was the World Crown weekend.
Okay.
Yep. We went down at Peach State, and And we went and, you know, run the gear at Greenville Pickens. We got down talking to them drivers down there at, you know, Peach Day. And they found out what gear I was running and stuff like that. So they all got to talking one day. Now, I think I was ninth, and it was probably 30 cars. And they had asked me if I would drop down out of the way when they dropped.
When you say ninth, you ninth in like practice?
I started ninth in the race. I was qualifying or practicing, whatever we did. So anyhow, they asked me to kind of drop down out of the way when they throw the green flag for, you know, they could all come on by me because my car wasn't right for down there, they said.
Yeah.
So anyhow, when they dropped the green flag, I noticed, hey, these cars are slow. So I went high. I took nine of them in one lap. So we're riding along, having a good time, leading the pack everywhere. So it was on lap 25, halfway through the 50-lap race we run, caution come out. Well, Bob Mangrum and who else was down there with had the scanners?
That was J.D. Griffith's dad. Eddie had the scanners that night.
They had the scanners. Anyhow, they're listening to the other drivers talking with the radios and all, and they're talking about taking him out on a caution.
Well, how'd you hear about it? Because I know you don't pay attention to anybody on radio.
We had radios then.
He actually listened. This was one time he wasn't singing to me, and he was listening to me.
Oh. I was listening to that night. Anyhow.
Okay. Or not listening. He heard me. He wasn't listening.
Well, anyway, Steve called me and said, Dad, they're talking about taking you out on a caution. So I started sweeping my tires real violently. I'm talking about from one side of the track to the other, all the way around. For three laps, I did this. Well, I noticed it was all back there close. I guess I was trying to figure out, what the heck's this idiot doing?
Yeah.
So anyhow, when we went off into turn three and four, I went way up high, way up against the wall. And you had the point you could start the race at. Well, when I let it go. Well, I'm going down the front straightaway, and I looked up in the rearview mirror, and there wasn't even no cars behind me. So Steve and him was laughing on the rear, saying, well, they just now took off. The whole field just took off slow.
Yeah.
Yeah, he looked like John Force when he left.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to tell you.
Left the tree, but he was gone, and I turned around and looked, and Bob Mangum's sitting over here. He's laying down on the top of the trailer laughing. I mean, it was hilarious to watch how he pulled off this restart, and they didn't throw the yellow. They were like, you know.
Let me go.
They were sleeping. Oh. Second on back was snoozing.
So anyhow, we finished the race out and everything.
You won.
Yeah, I won. Yeah. Yep, we got a runoff from them.
Yeah.
So we pulled in the pits. Well, they motioned for me to pull over to the tech shed. So I pulled over to the tech shed. Well, all these drivers, everybody's coming over and everything. Well, they got to looking. We had stock manifolds on our car. They run headers. Well, they got to looking deeper. We got stock clutch, pressure plate. Flywheel on our car, they run minis and all. What all else was it they run different?
They had wide five hubs on it, quick change rear end.
Really? So were like limited, some form of a limited late model?
Yeah, with a stock. Well, they were mainly stock chassis, but, you know, I mean, to compare apples to oranges, we was a.
We were like a street stock car, and they were like a
one-legged man in the ass-kicking contest.
They just couldn't keep up with somebody from Greenville Pickens is all it was.
So they get under the car, and they see this. They see
everything.
All this.
You can believe it. They walked off and told me to get that thing down the trailer and get out of there.
It was hilarious. Yeah. It was a trip getting down there on his own. We've talked about this before.
Oh, yeah.
we run Greenville the night before and won, and we had our soaked tires in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So we're riding down in the trailer, me and Buddy Phil. And get off the exit down there to go eat at Commerce, Cracker Barrel.
Yeah, Atlanta Dragway, yeah.
We opened the door because we thought we was at the track or at the Cracker Barrel.
Yeah.
Opened the dang door, and it's concrete, and we were high.
It was stoned, I'm telling you. That stuff we put in our long tires back in make me high when I was racing.
Yeah, so. we were seeing stars and everything else and stepped out on the concrete thinking we're in a concrete parking lot at the Cracker Barrel, and this nut takes off.
Yeah, we drive off. I didn't know they were standing out on the side of the road.
We're standing on the side of the road at the exit ramp going, hey, where are you going?
So how long did it take before you stopped?
Well, we went trotting up, you know, we went to catch them.
Hey!
Yeah, was hollering and everything. I don't know what. I thought it was hitchhikers.
So that was a trip on his own.
A bunch of crap out of our trailer.
Yeah, two idiots is what we look like. Fun times.
So you go down there and win that race in that car. Do you come back to Greenville? Do you keep that car? What do you do with it?
We kept it a while.
Yeah, I think 2002. He sold the car. Jody McDonald and Larry Moore owned it.
Yeah.
In 2003, and I think it had, you know, different drivers. I think Rob Horton, Randy Ballou, CM Knight drove it.
Yeah.
And then they ended up at Larry and Jody asked Dad to drive the car a couple of times. They ended up winning the Shrine race. He and I, my rookie year was 2003. So he won the Shrine race driving it for Jody. and Larry, and then I won the Shrine race earlier that night. So that was kind of a monumental moment for cool. for the both of us.
We both won. We got a little poster here somewhere where we both won the Shrine race.
Yeah. So I think that car's
car's still around. Daryl Culberson owns that car right now.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I was talking to Rob.
That's a good
Saturday
car.
Night about that car, and he said that he ended up having to clip that car.
Yeah.
Put a front clip on that car. If you don't hang out at the racetrack, clipping a car would be like if you just come watch. Yeah. When we say clip a car, we mean he had to put a front clip on
it. It's a process. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a process.
And that car, I believe that car was built 96, 97.
Yes.
And then that Daryl still has that car and will be right here running the next couple of weeks. Yep. And the car Tim Sams has is the car that we had that we bought from Jim West. It was originally Jackie Foster's. And that car's 25, 26 years old now, I'm pretty
still
sure.
Still running.
Still a good car.
Yeah. So after that, you drove for them. You didn't really have a car. Or you kind of just driving for Jody and them. Or
03, he got out of it. And then 04, he was kind of turning it over to me.
Yeah.
Because it was one of them times
you started running a Charger.
Yeah. Okay. It was one of them times he poked his lip out and was done. And ended up buying a late model for a few races in 04.
From?
Tony Hamby.
I remember that. Yep.
I thought I was going to be a late model driver. Let me tell you something. I run five races. And there was five different wrecks in all five races. I wasn't the one that caused a wreck or nothing, but I was always in the darn thing when it was over with.
So it got pretty expensive pretty quick.
I ain't no late model driver. I can take a piece of junk and go out there and fly in it. I can't fly in a late model.
I don't know if I would say that. You get stuff in your head and do that. But
exactly.
I do remember at that time, you guys went from shop to shop to shop.
Oh, yeah, we were shop hoppers back then. We didn't have an idea what we were doing. We would go around. We'd visit Donnie Bishop. We'd visit Joe Blow, whoever we could think of around that would give us some on a late model and tell us. We'd come back home, work on it. We'd do everything every one of them guys said. So
a little bit here, a little bit there.
We never knew where we were.
We had no idea what we were doing. We looked like absolute fools.
Well,
it got so bad, I started to get in the passenger side one day.
So
he stepped away, 04. '05 is when he built that monstrosity of a Cadillac in that green station
wagon. Just kind of goofing around.
Oh, yeah.
Clowning around. He built that in that darn station wagon, that stock wagon.
Was that just going to be like an enduro car, or what was that?
No, originally I was wanting to build a Malibu station wagon for a super stock.
Okay.
For the fans, because the fans like crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So, and old Tom Blackwell told me, too, people used to call him and ask him, what's Guthrie building this year? So, they wouldn't let me run it in super stock. So, I built
Tom wouldn't?
Tom and him said, I ain't running that piece of junk in their super stock class. So I built a Super Renegade out of it. I went down Anderson, which I had a super stock motor in a Super Renegade car. I went down to Anderson and played with it some. But I brought out Greenville Pickens one night, going to run Renegade. Tom Blackwell come out there and asked me, where was I going with that piece of junk? And I said, I'm going to run Renegade tonight. He said, you ain't messing up my Renegade. So he goes back in and talks to Kevin Whitaker. And they decide, they said, well, okay, we're going to let you run that in the super stock. So I said, okay. So we had 8-inch tires on that night, and I went out there and played with it in the super stock. We brought it home and cut the whole back end out from under it, and we turned it into a full-blown super stock.
Well, I wouldn't say that was still full-blown.
Yeah, that wasn't another full-blown super stock.
It still had the tailgate that flopped down.
Oh, yeah.
The back window would open up.
You could grab underneath the seat like a stock passenger car and slide the seat forward and back.
Yeah, I had a little thing where I could slide the seat back and forwards where you could
adjust
it.
The column still tilted in that car.
Bless Kenneth Hedden's heart.
Yeah.
I recall him driving this car, and the dang tilt steering went forward with him, and Kenneth isn't a real tall fellow anyway. And the steering wheel kind of got away from him because he was driving with his hands on the bottom of the wheel.
If I remember right, he took a couple laps, and when it did that, he pulled right in and said, I'm done with this.
Yeah. He's like, I ain't getting in nothing on Ken Guthrie's deal no more.
And that thing even started it with a key switch.
Yeah, it still had the key on it.
We won, how many races, two that year? Or?
Yeah, we won a couple races that year. Had some guys tell us, hey, you need to get serious about racing. So we turned it, and we made that car. We got serious about it. We won.
Ended up winning with it.
Yeah, and And there's a picture here behind you. You know, I was sitting on the tailgate eating a hot dog in Victory Lane. Just
flipped
it was
down,
a joke.
Called it the grocery getter.
Oh, yeah. Well, I put the Hulk fist on
yeah,
the next
year
now.
Yeah, Hulk fist on it and all that kind of goof stuff.
But that one night that I won, though, that first year we got it, we, you know, I won in the station wagon. So I'm down in the tech shed, and Steve kept hollering, "Daddy, listen, listen." All the fans, the whole racetrack was chanting, "Grocery getter, grocery getter."
Good grief.
That was entertaining.
Yeah. So, what happened to that car?
Believe Zach Presley. No, Moats ended up with it.
So why'd you sell it? Why? I mean,
it was just it was a stock race car or a stock car with stock body. Did not need to be in super stock.
So you kind of went out there and proved. Some people said you need to get serious. You kind of proved a point. You won a couple races and then said, "Okay, let's really build a build a super wagon."
Oh yeah, we built a super wagon the next year, but. I built the next year. I built a super wagon and a Fleetwood Cadillac at the same time. Yeah, I took a Fleetwood Cadillac that weighed 6,800 pounds and cut this car in half, drove one half out one side of the shop, another half out the other side, and started building a chassis. When I put it back together, we had to put 300 pounds of lead in that car to make it weigh 3,200 pounds.
Yeah.
So it was sharp, though. It was pink, black across the top with a full facial picture of Elvis Presley on the hood. Shake, rattle, and roll on the quarter panels.
Yeah, got took out in turn one on lap one by our buddy Corn Dog Smith. Jacked him up. And years later, we find out there's a video of him crashing him.
Yeah, I thought Josh Sams crashed me all them years. I'm talking about 10, 12 years or so, 14 years.
When we say Corn Dog Smith, we're talking about Jason Smith. There's a picture out there of him deep throating a corn dog.
Yeah. So, look under the hood of Steve's race car.
Yeah,
love you, Jason.
We're going to have a hood off of my old car.
It's here.
We've got a hood with a picture of that on that car. That guy ate this hot dog. What was that?
Corn dog,
13, 14 years ago, he's still eating that corn dog.
And funny story about the corn dog. Chris Chastain caught me a couple weeks ago, and he said, "I will not eat a corn dog at this racetrack if you're around." He sits in his truck with the windows. He's got tinted windows and eats his corn dog to keep me from getting a picture of him on one of them corn dogs.
I won't even eat him in the truck. I ate one the other week behind the concession stand.
I don't doubt it.
When I knew nobody was around.
So if you ever have a corn dog shoved down your throat, be careful who's around because they may be a camera.
There may be a camera. And I know Christy's pretty...
Oh, yeah,
She's pretty sneaky with that camera.
Yeah,
so.
Christy Smith-Palmer will get you with it. But
she'll get you with that camera.
I got a dude with a banana the other night with got him on picture. So...
But, you know, we come back the next year with the super wagon.
Yeah.
And the super wagon, it was super. When I built that car, I didn't really get into measuring my body height and everything. I forget what all I really done, but it's, what was it, 42, 43 inches tall?
Yeah. Even on 6-inch ride height, the roof was 43 inches tall. And the late model at the time had a roof height of 49 in the center of the roof.
So Steve got on to me. We got to talking. There ain't no way I could go out Greenville Pickens with that super wagon that low. So I went back to the drawing board and raised it up. How much did I raise it up to?
We got it to probably 47, 48 maybe.
But go down the back stretch and you could barely see the roof sticking over the wall.
No. You could see the wall over the roof of the car. Yeah, you could see about a foot of the white wall above the car.
So more about, I want to go back to this Cadillac. So you go down in turn one, is like the first or second lap something?
Very first lap.
Jason bumps you and...
Yeah, well, they
spun around
out,
back in the inside wall.
Before this now, see, this Elvis Presley-looking car, well, Tom Blackwell told me somebody called him as an Elvis Presley impersonator, and they wanted to know if I wanted to wear his Elvis Presley jumpsuit opening night.
So would you call Tom and tell him you were building this car?
Yeah, Tom knew. He checked with me every year.
Yeah, actually, the story, too, is actually this station wagon that we were building this same year, Tom and... And the tech official come to the shop because there was people crying about that car.
Everybody was talking about it.
And he come and teched the car before it ever went to the racetrack. A lot of people didn't know that, but
they teched it here in the shop. We had to put it on the lift. They spent a couple hours teching that car.
It was crazy. You know, it was because they said it didn't have some kind of frame under it and this, that, and other. Yeah. They come over and they got to witness what it had.
But it was sheet metal. It had sheet metal all the way to the back.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm real good at camouflaging frames.
anywho.
Yeah, that was an interesting deal. Who gets teched in December?
Not many people.
You know,
so
for a race season, it starts in March.
But that car, that, say, I don't know, we won six or seven races that year or more, didn't we?
Yeah, he won in that car. He, the races that in 2005 or six with that car, the races that he didn't win was the races that he didn't want to win because he knew Tom was going to raise hell with him.
Oh, yeah. Tom would tell me, okay, you won enough something this year. But that car was awesome, I'm telling you. I missed a gear one night. I was starting outside pole. I missed a gear. Nine cars got by me. So when we drove off into turn one and two, I never cracked a throttle. I never touched the brakes. I passed Jason Smith was three wide, and I passed Jason Smith four wide going through turn one and two. When we come back around, I had one more car left in front of me, and we come back under the checker flag.
I won't ever forget, you know, being buddies with Jason and Goob and all his crowd. Jason told us, he said, Spotter come over the radio and said, car high. And he's like, I'm on the outside of three cars,
yeah,
two or three cars.
Wide. What do you mean there's a car outside?
He said, Steven, your daddy drove by me. I had speedy drive blowing in the car. He said, I don't know how the heck he passed me on the high side above two other cars.
I was so close to the wall, the speedy drive was coming off the wall, rolling in the passenger side of the car when I went around through there. But it hailed, though.
Yeah. So make that car. Build that car. It works good. The Cadillac never worked out, really.
No, just that one race deal was it. You know, after that, we cut it up and built Tim Crow a car out of it.
Yeah.
So we took the body off of it. We got the hood hanging here in the shop now. But
Elvis is up there.
So. Yeah, that was a one and done. I was ashamed of that car anyway. It was one of them cars I hated going to racetracks seeing.
But you had to see this car. That was one of the doggone.
I saw it. I cut the letters out for him.
Okay, yeah, he was the decal man for us.
Who was the NASCAR guy that?
He was a sports writer for NASCAR.com or whatever, and had seen that car. I think he was down doing a story for. I believe Mark Davis was racing at Greenville back then. He was doing a story featuring Mark Davis, and he got to talking to Dad about the car.
He come walking through the pits, and he was writing on his little pad, and I was leaning against the back of the Cadillac. Well, he walked by the back of the Cadillac, and he slammed on brakes and looked, and he said, is that a Cadillac? And I said, yeah, it's a Fleetwood. He said, that's got wide tires on it. I said, yep, watch it go to the front tonight. So they done an article about the Guthrie family, about my dad and us and Steve and all of us racing all them years.
Really?
And he was in NASCAR.com at the end of what year that was.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was 06 maybe. So.
Yeah, it's about then. That sounds about right. So.
So okay. we went on in 06, and I think he won eight races with that station wagon that year. And in 07, we changed it over and put a small Malibu body on it.
Yeah.
And
why'd you get away from the wagon?
I left the hood pins out, and the hood blew up and wadded the roof up. So we had to change the car from a wagon top to a Monte Carlo top about three-quarter way through the season.
Yeah, I'm talking about we come home with that car that day, and it just caved the whole top in when the hood come up. We brought it home, put a Monte Carlo roof on it, fixed the back and everything, took it back out to the racetrack at night, and they thought we had a completely different backup car, and it was the same car.
Yeah, I remember we were around the shop. My grandpa at the time was hanging around the shop. He's out in Oklahoma now, but he helped a lot with the body work, and I remember that story of you guys talking about working like dogs on that to get that roof ready. I remember him when you cut the Fleetwood
Cadillac.
When you cut the roof off that, he was cussing and saying.
He took a skill saw and cut that thing in half.
He's old school body man, so he thought there was no way you were going to be able to weld that back together and get it smooth because when you heated it up, it was going to wave. So he cussed when you cut it with a skill saw, but he got up there. I remember him he crawled in there. Now, we're talking about an old, he was 70-something years old at the time.
Yeah, he was in his late 70s then.
Yes, and when he got on the floor, he wasn't getting up. He had to have help to get back off the floor. So he crawled in the back of that car, and I remember him tack welding that thing and then holding a piece of
wet rag
to cool it down. He didn't want to get it too hot. But
Grandpa was the best body man there ever was.
Yeah, he was a good body man.
Yeah.
So he did all that. You guys changed this car over and then run it. I do remember there was another car, I think, that year too, though, wasn't there? There was a number 30.
Of them. That's the year we built three of them.
Oh, no, that was 07 when we had three small Superstar Malibu bodies. Yeah. Yeah. We had 30, and then we had two number 32s.
Okay.
We had two Galloway cars, and then we had the old red 00 back again.
Again?
Yeah. Again, that was the third time we owned that one car.
I don't know.
Yeah, so we had we had that. So Samaro bought the original Foster car, and Bob Root bought the other car. It was previously the station wagon. Mm-hmm. That car, you could do no wrong with it. That car was bad news.
Oh, yeah.
And Bob ended up with that car and run it. I think him and Tim Lawless run it for a little while in 07. And then Dad took a 10-year...
Yeah, I took a break.
Break from racing.
I was going to quit. I did quit. It hadn't been for just pain in the butt here.
Why'd you quit?
I don't know. I just got tired of it, I guess.
He just got burned out on it, and then... You know, 07, 08, 09, you know, and then 10, we lost Mom.
Yeah.
And we started building, and it's actually the car here now, the 95 that runs Renegade now, is the car we were building. Mm-hmm. For 10, he was going to go run some Super Renegade races. And then we lost Mom, and I got tired of seeing the car sitting here. So me and my 3-year-old son and wife would go to the racetrack with that car and race, and the two older kids would stay home. But Dad, he didn't come with us. You just, you know, a lot going on in life right then. It just didn't come out there.
I wasn't around either at that time. So you didn't have a lot of buddies going to the racetrack at that time either. So
I don't know.
So you're not going to the racetrack. Steve's kind of still going to the racetrack a little bit.
Yeah, by himself. Yeah.
He's running, and he's kind of keeping going. Yeah,
I run there. I run 5 or 6 races in 10. And then cousin Alex started running, driving for Larry Campbell.
Okay.
And I was going and helping him in 11 and 12, and then 12, he quit. So Larry Campbell asked me to take over.
Okay.
So I drove, you know, a couple of years for Larry, and then 13, we knocked the rear clip off of the car I was driving, and that's when I got Dad back in it, because I had the car here, and Dad started helping. You know, he put the rear clip on for the car, and you guys were all here and part of helping me then too.
Yeah.
A lot of teamwork for all my buddies come over, and we put that car together, and then Dad started gradually getting back around it,
helping them a little bit,
yeah,
putting cars back together. So started then, out.
So how did what was the car that he ended up getting to get back into it?
So in 2016, he bought a car. We seen Tim Crow at Spinks on White Horse Road, and he had a car that we had bought years ago, or built years ago back in 04.
Okay,
and it was Jason Smith's car. And Dad and I built
Jason
that car.
Jason ran it in Sportsman.
Jason ran it in Super Stock or Sportsman.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dad and I had built it. We knew it was a good car. And Tim had a good motor in it. And we knew the history of the car. And I think Tim was just joking when he said, come get it.
Yeah.
Well, when he said, come get it, we went home, got the trailer, and was sitting over there. It was at Chris Francis' shop. And I think we were there and showed up. Chris, like, what are y'all doing? Tim didn't tell him anything about it. So, anyway, we ended up getting the car. And, cut the chassis down, made it a 108-inch wheelbase car, and Dad went to racing. And back in 16, so that's when
we got back into it then.
What color was this car?
The car was green.
Oh, yeah.
That,
cause I love my money.
This is the Interstate Battery.
The Interstate battery-looking car. It's probably the most famous car what Dad's known for. I mean, he's had station wagons, Cadillacs, you've heard it, but Facebook question today was... when Dad drove that car and spun out, right rear tire caught the wall.
This is over the pit wall. Oh, yeah. Podcast now.
Yeah, this is over the pit wall.
Turn 3 and 4.
Yeah.
And we dove off in a turn, and I was running third. And the two in front of me, I forget exactly who they was now, but they had got sideways right in front of me. And I said, oh, Lord, and I done dove in way harder than I should have. So I was going to run into them. So instead of running into them, I slammed on brakes. The car spins around. The back tire touches the wall, and how it done, I don't know. The whole car jumped over the wall and went down the embankment in the Renegade pits. And there wasn't a telephone pole. There was one pole at 100 foot each way. And when I went off the bank, I dead centered that pole with the back bumper of that car perfectly on that bank.
And so, gets out of the car and says, I quote, who in the hell put that telephone pole in my way?
So if that meant for the pole, I'd have went on down in the pits and drove on out anyway.
Yeah.
So, but
that's
then
for you, Benny.
Yeah. Then the track officials come over and they'll ask me, how the hell are we going to get this car off this bank? I said, I'll tell you how. So we opened the hood up. They hooked it all on record up on the track and run the cable down the embankment and kind of slid me around. And I drove all the way around the bank, all the way to the Sportsman pit or the late model pits. They unhooked the cable, and I went back out on the track and was right back at it again.
Oh, Lord. So you, even though you hit the pole, were still able to drive that car.
Oh, yeah, you ain't gonna believe it. All we do is I knocked it all on plastic tailpiece out the next day, and you couldn't tell I hit it.
Okay.
Yeah, it got the bumper was all, but, yeah, that was pretty funny, getting out and wanting to know who put that pole there.
Yeah. So you get that car, you raced it for about a year. You kept it, if I remember right, you kept that the next year, too. But then
it ran in 17-some.
But then you decided... Anthony gave you an idea or said, I don't know. I think he was standing on pit road and said something to you.
Yeah, we got the idea to build the current type car we have now.
You know, I asked Anthony one day, was talking. I says, hey, all these doggone late model cars, everybody wrecks and tires up. What do they do with them? He says, I don't know. He says, I don't see why y'all don't make some super stocks out of them. So I said, well, okay. So I bought a Marlowe chassis, 2016. It run 3 or 4 races. It had a front clip bent. So I put a stock front clip on it and made us a race car.
Kept the leaf springs on it.
Oh, yeah. Kept the
truck arms.
Truck arms. Not leaf springs. That had truck arms on it. Yeah,
that's
my bad.
Why everybody hates me to this day, because I started that.
Well, you started a lot of stuff, too.
Yeah, I know. I built
many rules changed for him.
So
two of them that I built in. Built yours for you.
Yeah.
Helped you with yours. And
not what I have now. I don't have a truck arm car now.
Not
I have
now,
a leaf spring car.
But
he turned one of them. You turned one of them into the 55 with the 55 body on it.
Put the 55 Chevrolet on it, and we wrecked it on lap 5 practicing it. And it's been sitting since then.
But the original car that I was building to run Sportsman, ended up
that's
with.
That's the one I'm driving now.
That's the one you got now.
Yep.
So,
so he finally, I believe we ended up, I believe in 16 we ended up winning. So that was kind of a 10-year hiatus from Victory Lane, he hadn't. So we got one in 16 and then turned around. I think he's backed it up and got one each year since he's been back.
Yeah.
And now a couple since he's been back.
Yeah. He got two this year so far. Including one the other night.
Oh, yeah. Two this year. But you ain't gonna believe it. That car that we built with the truck arms and all on it, what has it been? 3 years we've been working and working and working trying to get that car to work. And we couldn't figure that car out for nothing in the world. Jason McDowell's helped us and everything. So, and Jason done the whole front end work for us and got it. The handle's good and all, but it just wouldn't go through the turns. So one day Jason McDowell says, y'all ought to check, this ain't been but a few weeks back, so you ought to check one of your front shocks. I forget which one he said, the right front shock.
Right front.
So we changed right front shocks, and y'all boys know where we at now, don't you?
thing went to running.
Changed the right front shock, and we were running tires that was, 4, 5, 6 weeks old, and then God knows how many laps I had on them anyway. So, it's tire management now because of the deal we're on out there. So you can't have too good of tires, but you can't have too bad of tires either.
So what he's talking about, if you're not out there and you're not in the pits and you don't know, the super stock run on
scuff
tire, basically just whatever you come to the racetrack with, they can't measure. They have little tread holes on them.
Depth holes, yeah.
Yeah, they can't measure higher than five and a half.
Yep. Yeah, I believe 30 seconds.
Yeah, and they can't punch in terms of the softness of the rubber. They can't punch below a 40. So
45.
So you can do whatever you want.
You can
to the
soak
tire.
Them a little, but you got to learn how.
You got to learn how. You can do whatever you want to them, but they can't have so much tread on them, and they can't. Well, there's no tread on them. They're slick tire. They can't have so much rubber on them, and they can't. They
durometer can't, a certain softness.
Durometer certain softness. So we've been chasing tires,
We get 3 races out of it. We get some of these takeoffs that everybody takes. If you'll get you one about 5, 5.5, what it punches, you get 3 races out of it.
Yeah.
We have a good handling car. Yeah. Well, a good handling car now.
Yeah, you start falling off after that.
That's what we've been doing now. Here last year, though, we had that big race where everybody showed up. Everybody.
I think this was last year when Anthony said, I'm not going to police the tires anymore. I'm going to. You guys bring whatever you want. Here's the rules, and here's the rules.
That was when 12, 10 of 12 cars were disqualified the first night.
Everybody shows. He says no new tires.
Yeah, no new tires, and everybody really kind of denied it. I wasn't going to deny it because I'll tell you what I got.
Didn't he pull y'all down to the tech shed and ask who here bought new tires?
Everybody said tires. He said, "What you got there?" I said, "I got 4 brand new ones on her." Bought them from Anderson.
Oh, Honest Abe over here.
Yeah, Honest Abe. And so he tells everybody he's got new tires. So you just say 10 of the 11 cars that were there that night got thrown out for tires.
Oh, yeah. No, the two is in the rear. The only two that got one to race.
Yeah. So, but now I think everybody's pretty close on tires.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, everybody. It's a pretty tight field right now. Yeah,
it is pretty cool to see you winning races now because I know for a while we didn't know what was going on. You've gotten
I thought I was getting too old.
Well, in your older age, I've been around for, almost 20 years now.
Yeah.
I was 18 when I started hanging around this shop, and I'm 38 now, so it's been 18 years. So the more like the progression that I've seen in you is.
Did you go to Ren?
Yeah.
Your calculator ain't right. If you were 18,
you're right about it. You're right about it.
If you were 18
years,
when you started here and you're 38 now, that's 20 years.
You're right about it. So, the progression that I see, you don't seem to. You can drive the car and your mind knows what to do and you drive the car because, like I've told many of people this, you and Kenneth Hedden are the only two people I've ever seen spin down the backstretch and never touch a thing. But you're the only person that I've seen do it twice.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I asked you one night, what do you do when you do that? And for everybody out, this is a Ken Guthrie comment. I asked, what do you do? What'd you tell me?
I told you I closed my eyes.
For the first couple spins.
Then after that, I kind of peep to see where I'm at, and then I let her go again.
And I ride in a dump truck every day with him with a 20,000-pound backhoe behind us.
Nuts.
What am I thinking?
Yeah. So these cars are fun, and it's good to see you run good. Because we don't know how much longer you're going to be doing it. I know each year you seem to say,
I'm quitting.
But now there's another car. I don't know if we're going to be able to get you out of this car now that it's so fast and we've got you good in it. But there's another car back here that we're working on too. So
that other car back there, everybody's going mad about it.
What do you got going on back there?
Steve Hollinsworth car. That's a good car from 10 or 12 years ago. He run it. So when we take it out there, we're going to make you boys chase it a while.
Hopefully. But so how long do you think you're going to keep doing this?
Well, I told my wife I was quitting this year. But you know what? It's hard to quit when you love something like this.
Yeah.
It's like these fishermen, they go fishing every week. Well, I go out to the racetrack every week. I don't throw no rod in the hole, but I go fishing.
He's throwing out, I'm quitting this year. I'm quitting this year. I'll be 50 in 3.5 years.
He ain't. I don't think he's going to quit.
No, I'm not going to let him. I'm going to quit racing before he does, and we're going to coach him along.
Yeah.
Because he's 68 and three quarter right now.
We kind of have to watch the car more than we used to. Instead of him telling us what the car's doing, we kind of got to watch what the car's doing nowadays.
I ain't never been able to tell you what's wrong with it. I think you're supposed to just drive it wide open and just drive what you got.
It does what it does.
Yeah, you ask him, what do we need to do to the car, or what do we need to adjust? Hell, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of one of them deals, so you got to watch his left front tire to tell what the car's doing.
So it's fun. Well, this has been fun. I hope everybody enjoys hearing Ken and his story and what's going on, and I'm sure we'll have him on here. We may end up having a Ask Ken segment.
That'd be cool. Yeah. Ask Ken. Oh, my God.
Whatever if anybody's got any questions they want answers to, I don't care if it's racing related or not, any questions out there that you want to know the answer to, hit Steve or go to the Pit Wall Podcast and send us a message asking the question, and we'll get Ken on here every once in a while, and we'll ask him some of these questions to see what his answers were. I know Mark Turner asked him about the Victory Lane, though, not this time, but the last time he won a race, he said something about his sponsors. He said, who are your sponsors you want to thank? And Ken threw out Real Pizza, and he said, oh, is there a Guthrie special up there? And Ken said, yeah, show them a gun at the window, and they'll give you whatever the hell you want. So,
and if any of y'all fellas need any pointers on how to cheat your car up, call me.
All right. So, again, glad to have Ken on here. It's been fun. I know it was good for
Super
Steve.
Exciting, yeah. And being able to record this and have this for the future will be awesome. And, you know, thank you for everything you've done to me and the boys in the racing and making memories. And Saturday night was special to me. You drove a hell of a race.
Yeah, well,
yep.
I'll remember. I love you.
I talked to Jason McDowell earlier. He said he was mighty proud of you. And I appreciate you. You've done a lot for me. So I appreciate that a lot. One of the lost sons over here.
One of the family.
Yeah, so I appreciate that. And thank you for coming.
And I got a song request for you. I need you to sing the song that I'm going to tell you tomorrow, Johnny Paycheck.
take his job and shove it. Ain't working here no more.
And that's King Guthrie, everybody. So, want to again thank Ken. That was pretty cool to have him on there, and but yeah,
very interesting.
Yeah, I know that was pretty cool for you, Steve. So, thank him again. I hope everybody likes that. But we want to get to results from the past weekend. We did have some racing. We kind of talked about it with Ken. Ken won the Superstock race, but want to get to the results from Anderson.
Absolutely. Anderson was well, both tracks this weekend was a little tricky. Little rainstorms come in. You know, at the wrong time, basically, for the race. I believe it moved in down, you know, around Anderson about 5:30, 6 o'clock right before qualifying, and they had a mess trying to get the track dry.
Did, yeah.
And anyway, they squeaked it in, got a good race in, got a good show. Going to start out with the limiteds. I believe they run last down there that evening. But we're going to start out with the limited late models, Mr. Ralph Carnes.
And there was some tech shed stuff going on there, too.
Yes, I believe the tech shed, they went in and checked out. I believe I'm hearing heads, cam, and intake is what I heard.
And Ralph, that was the track, did that?
Yeah, that was a track deal. Ralph's been winning a few down there, and they, you know, wanted to keep it honest.
So they spent the night down there.
Absolutely. But in the closing laps, they say Kenneth Edden was driving that thing windshield deep off in the corner to do what he could to make up ground on him. And Neil Meredith, Kenneth finished second, and Neil Meredith was third. And got a text today telling me that Neil was a ball of fire. You know, that was his first week, but he'd been running late model and really hadn't run much this year. And I believe that was his first race back, new body or whatever on the car, and come back. And they said he was really, really strong on his third place finish. Fourth place finish was Mr. Justin Sutherland.
Been around a long time. I've heard, I don't know if this is still true, but I've heard that Justin is running, like everybody else is running all this new stuff, new kind of setup stuff. I've heard that Justin is running like an old school setup, like maybe something like his dad used to run. I don't know if that's still true or
not sure. I'm going to have to reach out to Justin. Well, he and I talked a little bit back and forth on Messenger last week or whatever.
I don't think I'm giving any secrets away.
That's cool if it is.
That would be cool if he is to be running the old school setup. Absolutely, I know last year he was winning a bunch. So.
Yeah, I believe when this class started down there at Anderson, you know, it was they had a spring rate rule. They couldn't run under, I think, 600-pound big spring, whatever. So if he's on an old school setup, which pretty much they all probably are to a certain
extent,
old school setup, but a lot of knowledge behind Justin, you know, week in and week out. I see he's got his dad down there. I see pictures all the time. It's awesome, the father-son deal going on down there.
Yeah, that's cool.
But congrats to Justin on fourth place. And, man, keep digging. You got to get a win. I see you bust your tail on that car. I see you stuff on Facebook, and we like to see you get a win. It'd be awesome. But rounding out the top five was Eric Wallace. I believe he's from, like I said before, up around Mooresville and travels down here to race.
Yeah, so cool
Pretty cool deal. BM Modifieds were next on our rundown. J-Mac.
Talked to J-Mac this week.
Started fifth, and believe he got him two in a row there.
Yeah, he said he heard a rumor that he had some people coming for him this week. So I know I talked to him, I think it was Thursday or Friday. It was Thursday, and he maybe Wednesday. He was working on his car because he said – these boys are coming for me, so I want to make sure I got my stuff right. So,
well, I promise you, they don't work on their car as much as that boy.
No, that dude works on
J-Mac
a car, man.
Does some stuff. Man, boy, I'm telling you.
Anytime he's around, you can work on your car.
He's old school. He wants to get in there. Caden Howard was second. Brian Mitchell of the Mitchell clan was third. Outrun his pops, Chuck Mitchell, finished fourth. Russell Powell rounds out the top five.
Anybody wants a car, I think Chuck's is for sale. Is four
He actually sold that
Did
thing.
He sell it?
Yes, sir. Okay, he sold it. And I know it was top-notch car, too. And, boys, whoever bought it.
Is it staying here? Do you know if it's staying here?
Reading stuff on Facebook, I think it went to a fellow down around Dillon area. But word is he was going to bring it back up here and see if he could bust their tail like Chuck was doing.
Y'all keep them cars around here.
Yeah, Chuck was Chuck was a man on a mission in the little 20 car down there in the mini stocks, and that's a stacked field every week too.
Yes, it is.
So Austin Northcutt started on the pole and wound out the winner of that race. Veteran Chad Campbell, second. Jeff Turner, third. Tyler Cease, fourth. And Ben Burnett rounds out the top five.
Again, that stack mini stock field. Anybody can win any week in that division.
Yeah, Tyler and BJ Thrasher, I think they're teammates. And BJ Thrasher is one of the hardest ones around the area in them cars to beat. Him and his dad, Buster, they're awesome on them cars. So yeah. They kind of got everything covered. They help everybody out with those cars too, so it's a good deal. But we're going to move on to the legend cars. Carl Moberg was started on the pole and won it. Second place, Aiden Garcia, Mitchell Thompson. I mentioned him the other week, and I kept kind of questioning myself about his grandfather and everything. His grandfather was Rex Thompson, veteran dirt driver
so
there.
He was a dirt driver from back in the day.
He's a third generation driver out of the Thompson family. His dad Wesley, and then like I say, his grandfather Rex. Rex raced with my grandfather back in the day.
Wow, awesome,
pretty awesome. Mitchell Thompson third. Brandon Phillips was fourth, and Jared Holly rounded out the top five.
Awesome.
On to the front wheel drive. Here's our fella again. He's missing from victory lane over here at Greenville Picking Speedway, but he's making quite a few appearances down at Anderson. Scott Parker got him a win down at Anderson Speedway. Second, Josh Thomason. Josh, hardworking kid. He's on that wheel, and he's part of the Woohoo crew. Robert, his dad.
What? The Woohoo.
Yeah, crew. That's the Woohoo crew. That's they got a little deal going on. That's what they say, Woohoo Racing.
Okay.
Robert Hall's his dad, and anyway, Robert got third. Alan Porter fourth, and Tommy Davis, that's odd seeing Tommy Davis fifth, because Tommy Davis is always the top of the – he's podium finish 1, 2, 3 every week. He's Mr. Front Wheel Drive, him
working
and Scott
on
Parker.
Cars, yeah. Time, yeah.
I think Josh and Scott was trying to knock Tommy off of the top of the podium on being Mr. Front Wheel Drive, because Tommy's got it going on in little cars.
Yeah.
But good job, guys. Congratulations. Going to move on to pure stock. Michael Moat started on the pole. Wound up winning that one. Veteran,
driving them cars, yeah.
Veteran super stock driver from Greenville Pickens, Danny Gilbert, got second, getting tongue-tied. It's here.
Danny won the last race out there.
Yes,
finished
sir, Danny.
Second,
Danny won it. Danny's a good dude. He country as country can be. Chase Plesko, son, I'm glad you got up there tonight and things went good. Went your way this evening. Mark Sullivan fourth and Chris Lawson fifth. That was your results for Anderson Motor Speedway this week.
Good night of racing.
Good night of racing. It was a good stack field. I'm going to make an appearance down there this week. I'm going to go down there and see what all's going on and spread the word about this podcast down there in person.
Are they racing again
this week?
Okay. So I know Greenville's off this weekend, but Anderson's
racing. Yeah, Anderson's going to run. They're going to run the Renegade feature. Me and my lovely bride are going to go down Friday night and mingle around in the grandstands and see if we can talk to some people and share this podcast deal and get it out there. Cool. Let's spread the news around Anderson Speedway that we do talk about you folks on this podcast. Glad to have some of you guys on here.
So we got Greenville now?
Yes, sir. Greenville started out a little rough, too. Rained, 5:30, 5:45 the other night.
I didn't think we were going to get that in.
No, I told you guys here around the shop all morning. I knew I had that feeling in my gut all day. We woke up to rain here at the shop. So I hate sitting at the racetrack all day on Saturday, and then they call it 6 o'clock. It drives me insane.
It happens.
All it does is make me have to take the wife to Hooters on Saturday night.
There's a free plug for Hooters. Hooters of Anderson. I think Hooters of Greenville is going to have some trouble being open. They had a car drive through the wall.
They got a drive through put in yesterday afternoon here.
Free.
Yeah. No charge to the driver. I need to ride by there and see how that happened and what went on.
Yeah.
Good deal. Going to start out with a front wheel drive. We're going to try to go in the order they run Saturday night. It was a little tricky because rain on and off. It made a mess of everything. The daggum pits was muddy. It was just a mess.
Yeah.
But We're going to start off with front-wheel drive. Mr. Joshua Thomason won it. Tommy Davis, I think they had a little gap between their bumper this week. Last week, Tommy stuck to his bumper.
It was close still. Yeah. It was. It wasn't.
Yeah,
it,
you could probably stick two pieces of notebook paper to it this week. Last week, it was only one.
Yeah.
So Tommy second, Scott Parker climbing up. He's there got him a podium. In Scott's defense, I haven't talked to the fellow. I follow him. You know, he's on Facebook. He had he's got a newborn child over the, you know, past 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. So I'm sure his attention's been at the hospital and not on his race car, which, you know, being with a wife and a baby, awesome deal. Ricky Hill finishes fourth, and Austin Hill finishes fifth. Rounds that out. That Joshua is, like I say, part of the woohoo crew. Good to see you win there, little buddy.
Earlier it was the woohoo crew.
Yeah, the woohoo. Good to see you win there, little buddy. Gonna go on to limited late model.
First race.
Dang good field of cars again. You know, we say it, can't say it enough. He's a good stacked field. Ryan Walker, the points leader, he rounds out.
Works his tail off. I don't think he has many people helping him at the racetrack.
He don't. I believe I seen a new crew member this week or two. He's got Bailey Turner that helps him. I think Bailey's his main guy. Pretty well there every week religiously. And then I see Mitchell Moat was with him this weekend, and then had another fellow I was seen doing a tire. So he had a couple of guys. Good to see that.
Yeah,
you know, they got a 2-man crew going for a championship in the late model, limited late model. That's pretty cool deal.
That's rough.
And you know, he had Mr. Porter on his tail.
Old Randy
got second. He up on the wheel there. Ryan Glinski got third. Magnum Tate was fourth, and Tasha Coomer rounds out the top five.
I believe Mangum was in somebody else's car this week.
He was in the 34 car of, they call him Toots.
Greg Wellborn.
I forgot the last name. Knowing him and his dad real good for a long time. Mine went blank on the last name. We're going to jump over to the Pure Stocks. The Pure Stock Sixes, that is. Robert Hall as part of that woohoo crew with Josh Thomason. He got first in the Pure Six. Robert Floyd second, Marty Chastain third, Kevin Ravanna, I believe, was fourth, and Jennifer Sexton round out the top five. That was that's the lady friend of Robert Hall. That's his sweetheart. So they got him a first and a fifth. That's pretty cool.
Might have to switch cars next week.
Yeah, Jennifer, get over here in Robert's car. Tell him. Put a pink five on yours or whatever your number is. I can't remember. You might be 0.5. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But good deal. That's pretty awesome. Y'all had a pretty good class, a good field of cars the other night.
We were talking about that the other week and here at the shop the other day. We were talking about that again. It kind of, those cars just seems like they exploded. All of a sudden there was two of them, and now there's. Yeah, seems like there's 8, 9, 10.
Oh yeah, had a veteran driver show back up in that class the other night, and he's had a little bit of misfortune in life over the past several years with the loss of his son. I'm talking about Bobby Butler. Speaking of his son Tyler,
he did come back. That car and that car looked like it came straight off the street. Yeah, they knocked the
straight off. That thing had a slick paint job on. I seen Bobby on Facebook bragging about it. That was pretty good paint job he had there, slick. Good to see you back, man, racing in Tyler's memory. Awesome deal. Glad to have you back out there. Please keep coming back. Bring in that hot rod out there. On to Pure 8. Pure 8 had a familiar car in victory lane with a familiar driver for another car.
Substitute.
It had a substitute. Spencer Darnell, the kid. I mean, what can you say about the young man? He's a driver.
Watched it, too. I mean, he just kind of stroked it to him.
Oh yeah, he wore him out. I wish that Mike Moat would have been there. Michael Moat told me the other day, you know, Mike's son, that they was cutting up and said we was giving him a hard time because, you know, he won the other week and the godfather of Pure Stock wasn't there, Mr. Dodgins.
Well, he could have got him two in a row.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Old Spence get up on the wheel too.
Well, so. He could have proved us wrong. Maybe.
Yeah, but. Mike, did you go on vacation or Are you in one of them retirement homes like old Guthrie boy, Ken Guthrie is?
Might be getting too late.
Yeah, he might get a little old.
That rain might have scared him off.
Yeah, it could have been the rain. Could have been he seen that young buck in that 555 and didn't want to come out there and follow it around. Yeah. Just kidding with you, Mike. Thank the world, everybody. Brandon Daves, second. Sean Thompson. He corrected me. Yeah, 1.5, third. And veteran Rob Horton finally dusted off his driving gloves and brought his old butt out there and raced a little bit with us.
I talked to Rob again. I mentioned it when we were talking to Ken. Talking to him again, it was good to talk with him, and I mentioned him last week too. Rob said that he didn't realize how much he missed racing and how what a big part of his life was not around when we were talking, and it was kind of cool. He's just having fun. He says he's got a Camaro that he's working on. He never worked on a Camaro before, has no idea what he's doing, but he's been tinkering with the Camaro that he's building. I don't know what he's going to do with it, but he says right now he's having a blast.
I've always been under the assumption Rob didn't have no idea what he's doing anyway. just kidding, Rob.
I know he knows chimneys, but
yeah, I heard he's pretty good with those. Reagan Darnell rounds out the top five. Reagan is Robin's daughter, Spencer's little sister. She's 16, 17 years old. Awesome to see the young lady
getting
out there.
Better and better and better.
Oh, absolutely. She's got her a hot rod. She's had a few drivers in that thing and run up front. And by God, she's put her up in fifth place. And, you know, keep climbing, girl. You're going to get it. And you're going to be there soon. I can't wait to see it. I think you're going to put a smile on Grandpa Robert's face.
Yeah. He'll be happy, I'm sure.
Yes, sir.
When she parks that thing in Victory Lane.
So good to see that both the Darnell kids out there, great kids. Good to see both of them.
Two other drivers in that division we should mention, Peyton Guthrie. We've found a couple things on his car again. He's getting faster, too. And
Emma McJunkin. Yes.
I think Peyton passed her, and they kind of was chasing each other, and then something happened with Peyton's car, I guess.
He looked like he was on his way to go up there and make a bid for Reagan's spot. He looked like he was off, you know, running her down a little bit. And then believe we've had a rocker arm nut back off on his car, and he started skipping and all and got passed. But he was disappointed. Him and Emma's got a little deal going back and forth, you know, who's better and who's not and who's cheating and who's not and all that. So they're both just having a good time with
it. It's a cool division to see because it seems like there's a mix of veteran drivers out there that are racing, and then there's some young kids out there that are learning. And it's if you're not in racing and you're looking to get in racing, a pure stock division to start in.
I mean, you got a variety. I mean, Greg, you know, Greg's
veteran.
Yeah, veteran. Mike Moat's a veteran. You got Rob, he's a veteran. And you got these kids, you know, Spencer's 22. Then you got Reagan, you know, 17. Then you got Emma and Peyton, you know, they're 14 years old. So
there's
a variety of age difference there. But
you got 1.5 out there. I think he's kind of in between. He's like a kid sometimes and sometimes.
Yeah, I think Sean's probably 31, 32 years old. He's a little high strung. He 1.5, he's a heck of a
he's
dude.
He's wound tight.
Yes, sir.
For sure.
My buddy, though, buddy, he's a good dude.
Straight out of the box.
That's where his carburetor's from. Good field of cars. Good to have those pure stocks out there. They're entertaining. So the night really
got interesting before the next race.
Yes. As the next race went on the track, as you know, you guys were going out on the track, correct?
We were sitting there off of turn two. They kind of staged us while the other race was going on, and I kind of – It started raining. I mean, from inside the car, I was like, it's raining. And I remember I was kind of on the radio. It's raining. Does anybody know it's raining?
Well, I didn't have my radio on with you at the time. So, as you know, I didn't answer you there for a while because I was freaking out and running up and down pit road because I'm like, these dudes are getting ready to go out there and bust off, you know, 21:50 lap times or whatever. And, you know, pretty quick around Greenville, you know, them cars. And it's freaking raining, and I'm like, "What are you guys doing?"
It was gonna. If we would have gone out when at that time, I think it would have been all-star race of, what was that, 99? Where
they unloaded the backup cars.
We don't have the backup cars to unload, though. We'd all went in turn one and wadded them all up, I think.
And had one hell of a fight down there between the officials and the drivers.
So they kind of pulled us out. We rode around for a few laps, and I think they wanted us to try to keep the track dry. And I think a lot of us in the cars just felt like it was – Some of us couldn't see out the windshield. I couldn't see out the windshield for a while. We came in, they wiped the windshield out. We went back out for a few laps, and the track was getting too dark, and a lot of us just felt like it wasn't going to be safe. So we pulled in, and
loaded up.
We did.
Yeah, we loaded our two superstocks up.
I didn't ever see Chris Chastain. I didn't see him load up. I saw his car sitting out, and I think Austin Samero, he stayed. He kind of went right back out. They were trying to dry that. It kind of stopped raining right after everybody kind of pulled in.
But when it did rain, it was raining.
It was raining. Yeah. There was no way we could run. If we would have ran that race at that time, we would have wadded the cars up. No fault of Anthony or any of the track officials. I was kind of aggravated that they put us out there to begin with because I felt like it was too wet anyway. But I get he had a lot of people on the back stretch.
He did, and
we had a lot of cars there too.
Anthony told us, you know, we had the biggest field of cars across the board last night. We had the biggest field of the year.
Yeah,
absolutely great. Love seeing all these cars. I believe Anthony he told a story in the drivers' meeting about how Kevin told him it was the ghost of Tom. You know, when it rained, you know, generally late in the afternoon, bam, you close it, you're done. You know, you're not going to sell tickets. Nobody's going to come if it rains that late. You know, cancel it and going home. And he said, you know, in a nice way, you know, I'll be dogged. I'm not gonna do this. We're going to get this race in if possible. And you know, everybody worked their tails off.
Yeah, we loaded our cars up. Next thing I know, we closed the door on the trailer, and I turn around and I see Anthony doing about 60 down the front stretch in his 2500 series truck.
And if they knew what a process it was to load our cars in the trailers is a pain in the butt.
It's a pain in the butt. But I see him flying down the thing. Next thing you know, they want everybody's cars out there to try to dry the car off. And we kind of just contemplated whether we were going to go back out there because I didn't think there was any way they were going to get the track.
No, I signed it off. I was like, you're done.
So we unloaded the cars, got them back out there, and I went out there. Your dad got out there. I think he made a couple laps. I had an issue right before the race. I had to fix. So I got out there for like one lap to help dry the track off. And Chuck pulls up next to me in the truck and says, "Hey, they're cutting the race to 15, and they're going to cut the Renegades to 15 laps to try to get it in." And I kind of shut my car off. I said, "You know, you got to give us time to get the driver suits on." "Oh, yeah, that's fine." So we pull in the pits, get right in the pits, and I get out of the car, and I'm going to the trailer. And as I'm walking in the trailer to get my driver's suit on, and I'm probably one of the slowest people when it comes to getting my driver's suit on, getting my helmet on, and all that stuff.
Or showing up on time.
Yeah, or showing up on time. It is what it is. But as I'm walking in the trailer, I hear them say, "Superstocks on the track."
Yeah, time to go.
I was like, "What?"
Yeah,
you got to be kidding me.
And keep in mind, you know, you're preparing to get in your car. I'm sitting here looking at the track, and it's not light gray. It's still kind of a, you know, it's still wet in my eyes. I'm thinking, you know, my cars ain't going out on the track with you. This is insane. I'm not going to let you guys go out there.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It was like, I don't know if the wind blew right or what, but it wasn't a few minutes, and you boys went out there, and it was.
Well, it was close because I know that I came. You got on the radio while I was getting my helmet and all that stuff on. You said they turned the light off. They're going green. You need to go. And I'm still in pit road. I go flying down pit road. They shut the light off. Or they flip the lights back on. I guess they saw me coming.
Let you catch up.
They let me catch up. We end up starting the race. Good race. Ken ended up winning.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome to see.
We talk a little bit more in depth about these races because we're in them, and I just feel like we can give a perspective that we can't give for the other races that we're not in. So
absolutely,
but this was a good race. I finished the whole race, first time in a few weeks, but finished the whole race, and I feel like I had a really good view of that race. I couldn't get going at the beginning, got going at the end. I felt like I was coming on, but I got to watch Ken and Devin. They got around the 9 car. We thought the 9 car was going to drive away with it. We thought he was going to get out front and just kind of drive
off. I really thought last practice, I thought the 9 car was going to, you know, pace the field, put the number on the board, and lo and behold, old car 3-2 climbed to the top.
Well, Devin got around him first, and your daddy followed him straight through.
Yeah, well, I was talking about early in practice.
Yes.
You know,
he did pop off the board. But in the race, Devin got under Austin. The 9 car got by him. Ken followed him right through. And then Ken was Mr. Patient. I don't know what
come over
him.
Yeah.
But he was patient, got around Devin. It was everybody raced real clean. I don't even think anybody touched anybody. So.
I think there, you know, toward the end, Devin's car, I was watching and I told Devin in Victory Lane, his car's working in the middle. There's about 100 foot or 150 foot through the center of the corner. His car's bad news.
Yeah.
It gets outside of that box and it was getting a little loose up off. But I think when him and Dad got beside of one another, I think, you know, he got a little loose on the outside and they might have doored a tad or whatever. It wasn't no harm, no foul. But they put on a good show. You know, I know the fans was loving stuff like that. And, you know, Devin's getting up on the wheel and looking good out there each week.
He gets up on the wheel every week. In practice, it seems like Devin kind of – sometimes he won't be the fastest car, but in the race, man, he shows up.
He comes, yeah. I think he's got a little bit of that CM Knight stuff going on. He's a little sandbagger. I think he's learning a little sandbag in the early age.
That might be.
Yeah.
Might be. But
you little punk.
They put on a show. Ken won. Devin came in second. Austin Somero came in third. If I'd have had 5 more laps, I might have gave him something.
But, yeah, you was coming on stronger toward the end. Your car got better.
Got fourth, and Chris Chastain
rounds out the top five.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep. So
yeah. Good race. Good night. It was kind of on a hurry up pace because we knew more rain was coming. So they jumped right in. They rushed through Victory Lane, jumped in, got the limiteds back on the track to run the second race. Had a caution pretty quick. I believe Magnum Tate and Tasha got
Tasha
got
started on the pole. They inverted and Tasha started on the pole. Magnum, I think they said it was like Tasha's led a good portion of the race, lap 16, I think.
Oh, was it that late?
Yeah,
then?
It was about lap 16. I think her and Magnum got something happened coming off turn two. Tasha got the bad end of that deal, ended up in the inside wall.
Yeah, I think I was reading where, you know, they got together, drove in a little harder than anticipated or whatever on his part and got into her and
it was anything intentional, but no. They ended up putting Magnum in the back, which I think
he ended up parking.
Did he?
I think so.
Okay.
I don't know if they parked him or what, but I think he ended up parking.
Okay. So I saw Tasha come down the back stretch. The hood was kind of bowed
up.
Yeah,
let's hope it didn't clip it or anything like that. Let's hope not.
But Mr. Porter inherits the lead.
Yeah. Randy and old car 3-2. Inherits the lead, and him and Ryan Glinski, that kid, drive him in deep. Done a well of a job. He was second in that race. Like I say, Randy Porter won that race. Ryan was second. Ryan Walker, third, and Pops, Mr. Ward, was fourth. And then probably the nicest guy, Greenville Pickens, rounds out the top five. Bob Root. Bob's an awesome dude. Good to see him get a good run. I love that darn black number 9 car. That thing is sharp.
He came out there, started coming back out there a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it's been
two or three races, let's put it that way. He's been struggling with that car a little bit, but he might be getting a hold of it. I know he's got Ryan Walker in the same shop, so
yeah,
he's got a good car. Yeah.
He might need to swap car numbers.
Maybe
do it when they ain't around, see if they not pay attention.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think them boys, they keep their eyes on them cars.
Yeah.
Oh, good to see Bob running good, though. But like I say, Bob is a super dude. Good to see you running there, buddy.
Yep.
So that rounded out the top five in Limited. We're going to jump over to Renegade. Renegade got off real interesting. A little kid in a blue 18 went off into turn one on lap one. And I don't know that his engine would have blown any more if he would have had dynamite shoved in where the camshaft goes.
Hankernated.
Yeah. That bad boy, we took that thing out of the car today and disassembled it. And the intake and fuel pump and carburetor is all that we saved. It's junk. Nothing.
It for sure hankernated. Yeah. I think, didn't you say that the crankshaft's in two pieces?
Yeah, the crankshaft's in two pieces. It completely destroyed his motor. So We have more motors, but he's opted to tear his car apart to start working toward next year. He wants to. He's got a special throwback he's wanting to do for his daddy next year. So anyway, the folks don't know we're talking about my son Hunter.
Hunter Guthrie.
He had a little misfortune.
He kept it out of the wall, which is great. There was a lot of oil on the track. They had to clean all that up.
So. Yeah, we did not have any water or oil to drain out of the motor today. It all ended up in turn one.
Wow.
And how he kept that thing off the wall, I've yet to figure out.
Yeah.
But hate to see that for him. But the veteran Bobby Emery in the Darnell number four takes the win. Michael Mote in the Freddie Hale, the Hale's towing number 54 was
give
second.
Give him hail.
Give him hail. That's what's on the back bumper. He was second. Our little our guy here, he's out of our shop, Chicken Little Motorsports, Mr. Michael Dean. He was third. Chucky Greer, glad to see Chucky got his car together after a little stupidity on the driver's part several weeks back. Glad to see him back out there. Glad to see him running good. He's got him a good little hot rod. And then CJ Stewart, the kid's out here learning week in and week out. And he kept his nose clean Saturday, and he run a good race, and he rounds out the top five. And CJ, Chad, glad to see you boys running good.
So we had more cars there, by the way. We had a good field of cars. Tyler Woodring was there. He had issues. Zane Anders was there. They brought two cars. They brought one out there. It tore up. They went back and got another one. It tore up. So they were there trying to race.
Yep.
Steve was noticeably absent from the race. It had a skip for a while now, and we thought we had it figured out.
Yeah, we think it's in the valve train. I didn't want to break a valve spring or whatnot, and you know, shove a piston.
Anchor made two motors in one night.
Yeah, I didn't want to shove a valve through a piston and tear that motor up. So, opted to bring her home in the box instead of tearing her up.
So, got a little work to do, but there was a good field of Renegades
absolutely.
To run, and we just got to keep them all together before the race starts.
Got to have them all together, and. Got to get these cars out there and support the historic Grimble Pickens Speedway. Yep. Let's keep this thing alive.
So they got all the race in. I never thought that was going to happen, but they got the whole race in. Literally like 15 minutes after the last checker flag dropped, the bottom fell out.
Oh yeah, if 15 minutes.
Yeah,
what did we do? Getting the trailer door shut.
We got the trailer door shut. I believe we sat down or stopped to take a breath, and I know there was a lot of people in the pits that were gathered talking. You could hear that rain, those big giant drops hitting,
people screaming and running.
So
yeah, it was quite the evening. And kudos to Grimble Pickens Speedway and the staff and the drivers and crews who got out there and dried the track on multiple occasions to get that race in.
It would have been very easy to just say, hey,
throw the towel in.
With this. But Josh Sams came up to us right after the race. We were actually loading the trailer up. Josh started – he did a podcast for – I don't know how long it went for, a few episodes. This was a while back.
Been a few years ago.
I don't remember what exactly it was about. I think he was more bigger NASCAR stuff.
I think they went across the board just racing in general.
But I thought it was pretty cool. Josh actually came up to Steve and I. They weren't racing like I said it last time we were talking about results, but they're not racing. But Josh showed up at the racetrack and came up to Steve and I in the rain.
In the monsoon,
and thanked both of us. And I thought that was pretty cool of Josh to do. Thank both of us for doing this podcast. So
yeah, it's been an awesome outpour of people reaching out to us. I know you get messages. You know, we got friends out there, friends we've had for years. Big Top, Adam Satterfield. I've had numerous people today, you know, message, and throughout last week, everybody's loving what we're doing. And we've got big things that we want to do with this, but we also want to promote right now through the season ending. We want to promote what we have right now, and we're looking to bring in, you know, you Marty Wards or Gene Morgan would be freaking awesome to have Flash. I would love that. I mean, Donnie Bishop, people would love to hear about these guys, and we've got not only, you know, we've got Reese Fant wanting to come on here, and doggone, he's going to come on here and tell some stories that you people are going to love. And then, you know, we've got the former owners of the racetrack, son Mark Blackwell. He's from L.A. He wants to come on and talk with us and tell us a little insight, because everybody knows Tom had the most colorful personality.
Yes.
You know, he'd drop an F-bomb and a birdie finger at you in a minute.
For sure.
And so Mark wants to come and tell us a little bit about things through the history, so it'd be cool as, you know, heck to have him on here. And
yeah, we've got a lot of people that want to come on, but like Steve said, we're trying to we want to kind of get some drivers on while we're racing that are racing right now. We are going to get to – I don't want everybody to think that we're just going to do Easters. We are going to get to some stories, you know, from Anderson, from Greenville, some of these guys that have some of these old stories, tell some of the history of the racetracks. We're going to get them on. Probably going to be some in the off season when we're going to get some of them on. But
and absolutely, I had a suggestion I meant to tell you before we went on. Michael Altop texted me today and was back and forth, and he suggested and go ahead and get ready. Lee Malone's got a late model stock chassis right now, leading the national points.
Yes, you know,
he's right here in our backyard. He's building late model stock chassis.
Late model stock chassis, and for sure.
A damn good one.
Oh, some of those welding pictures, man.
Oh my God.
It's crazy stuff.
It's insane.
It's crazy stuff. But we got, we appreciate all the support. Like Steve said, we're getting a lot of awesome feedback. If anybody has any suggestions, we do have a Pit Wall Podcast Facebook page now. You can go on there, leave us a message or you know,
a comment or anything.
Comment or anything if you have any suggestions for it. Like I said earlier, we'll see how this Ask Ken Guthrie goes. If you got any questions for him, put them on there. We'll ask Ken on here.
Lord.
If we get some crazy ones, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But we like love the feedback. Keep the feedback coming. If you have any suggestions for us, give us some suggestions. We're gonna keep doing this thing, and hopefully keep bringing the light to the racetracks around here. And if it grows, it grows. If it doesn't, then we'll keep talking about these two racetracks right around here.
And David and I talk about it all the time. We do this one night a week, and it's, you know, a couple hours, and then there's hours and hours of editing that David does and he spends time doing. And you know, it's awesome to we could do a podcast and release it every single day. We love to sit around and talk racing. So,
but Ken gets on us sometimes. About talking.
Says we talk to it, but I'm sure if we done that, Ashley, David's wife, and my wife Crystal, I believe we'd probably be divorced.
Probably would. So, but the other thing I want to put out, and this, I hope this doesn't turn anybody off the wrong way or anything like that. We're not asking for handouts or anything like that. But if there is any local businesses out there that do want to advertise on here, we are looking for that. It does cost money for us to host the podcast. We will continue to do this even if we don't get anybody to help out or any sponsors. But if there is anybody out there that would like to advertise on here, we are more than happy to do that. It would just help deflect some of the cost on the hosting of the podcast and some of the editing that goes on with it. So, but like I said, if we don't get any, we're going to keep on with it. But we really appreciate everybody listening. Give us feedback, leave us a message, send us a comment, and
sorry we're so long-winded.
We are. This is a long episode. We didn't want to cut the results, and we want to make sure we got Ken in and everything. But just to give you a little preview of next week, right now, as of right now, we've got scheduled Mr. Greenville Pickens, Randy Porter, coming on.
I'm excited about this
week.
One.
So we talked to Randy this week, asked him if he'd come on. He said, yeah, he'd love to do it. So we're going to have Randy Porter on, talk to him about him racing now. Him racing now, and get some information about him racing in the past too, because he's been all over the place. He's
everywhere.
Raced bush cars, he's raced late models, he's I don't know
trucks,
all kinds of stuff. So we're gonna get Randy on. We'll have results from Anderson next week. No results from Greenville's not racing next week, but we'll have another episode coming out then. And again, we appreciate everybody listening to
the Pit Wall Podcast.
Peace.
presented by Kicking Asphalt.
Thanks, everybody.